This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Yeah, Frank here, he's got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's the...
billiard room.
Come on already. We call it the...
The Place to Be.
Yes, the Place to Be. The Place to Be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can. Ugh.
Time to play the game!
No, you left me satisfied and smiling.
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to Be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
Japanese band Oral Vampire produced a song called The Repo Man and used footage.
Oral Vampire, huh?
Or Aural. A-U-R-A-L. What kind of show is this?
Sounds like some Twilight porn in Michael Winston's collection there.
Oz went on to star in American Pie, of course. Bismarck. No, was it? Bismarck, was that?
Bismarck.
No, who's the other guy I'm getting confused with?
Bismarck. Yeah, he dressed as North Dakota.
There's only one place where the big boys play, and that is in my extra queen size bed. Well, it just happens. What can you do?
Let's talk the things.
I think they might hit up. Shock wall.
Is that the Shockmaster's wall?
Yeah, I like Big Dick myself.
Place to Be Nation. Welcome back to the great episode of our
one and only Place to Be podcast.
Worse than Josh Richards.
Just Rosero coming to you live from the PTB Man Cave here for episode 301 of the Place to Be podcast. And of course, I must bring in the man who celebrated his 3-year anniversary with me, married together here on this podcast and on the website and everything else. And Scott Criscola. Scott, how you doing?
Good evening, JR. Good evening, Place to Be Nation. As my PIC said, are we starting a new trend now? You're going to do the episode number? And
nah, I had to do this. You get to do the other 99 of them.
Yeah, that's true. Again, as mentioned, 301 Season 4 begins this evening.
I'm just glad that we can now stop hearing you say only 15 away from three bills. Now we're...
Well, you know what that means, JR.
99 away.
Only 99 away from four bills.
Closing in. We're going to start coming up with 400. Yeah, I hope you all enjoyed episode 300. A little bit different. We didn't want to make it the same as episode 1 or 200. We're trying to be something a little bit different. So I hope you enjoyed the trivia contest and the memories there, as well as the climax of the VKM coma saga and everything else that went on. Just a quick bit of programming note there for episode 300. We're having a problem as of when we're recording this with the feed from Podbean. So part 2 is not showing up in iTunes or on Stitcher. It is available if you go right to placetobenation.com or placetobe.podbean.com, or if you download the app for your iPhone or iPad at placetobe.podbean.com/mobile, that episode is there. For some reason, the RSS feed to iTunes and Podbean, iTunes and Stitcher is causing an issue. So if you want to listen to part 2, it is available. It is out there, just not through those two channels as of the time we're recording this. I'll update the Facebook page and the Twitter as soon as it's ready. So I just wanted to throw that out there, Scott. And now we can dive. Actually, I got a story for you. You want to do that before we dive
in? Yes, you do have a story for me. I wonder if, and the part of the story, JR, is I bet you're not the only one who has this story.
Probably not. So I got a couple of emails around 10:30 this morning, one from the WWE Network and one from PayPal.
We'll obviously preface by saying, obviously, the free trial's up, so...
Well, no, not even that. I didn't do the free trial. I paid on February 24th.
Well, so did I.
So my month was up today.
Oh, okay.
So I had nothing to do with the trial. So my month was up today, so I paid, and that was it. And I had an email from Dirty Network saying there's a problem with my payment and my account's been suspended. I'm like, oh, great. At first I thought it was like a spam message. You know, sometimes companies will dummy it up and try and fish you through the website. And then I had one right after from PayPal saying my payment went through. So I'm like, all right, something ain't adding up. So I go to log in, can't log in, tells me my account's been suspended. So I'm like, all right, fantastic. So I call customer service, get one guy, kind of doesn't really know what's going on, doesn't understand, get another guy. And about 40 minutes total I've spent on the phone this morning with these two jamokes. And the second one, he comes back, right, after like the third time I go on hold. And first of all, he tried to do like a survey of me, basically, when I first came on the line. He's like asking me how I use the network and what I'm using it through. And I said, look, buddy, I don't have time for this. I'm like, my problem is with billing. I'm not answering these questions. So then we quickly moved past that. And so he goes and checks with the supervisor, comes back. And he's like, well... He's like, it shows that your payment, we tried to pull the payment at 2:48 p.m. on the 24th. And I'm like, well, you know, this happened on the 24th. So I'm like, you know, I said, you know, it's only like 11:30 a.m. on the 24th, right? He's like, well, this is Central Time, so... And I'm just like, I'm trying to piece together what he possibly could mean, right? So I said, I wouldn't know. That's in the future. I'm like, I don't know what happened. And he's like,
what,
well,
is this, Chikara?
He's like, this is 2:48 p.m. It says it tried to pull. He's like, did you have funds in your PayPal account at that time? And I go, and I'm trying to be nice, right? I'm really, I'm working hard here. And I'm like, buddy, I said, I am not trying to be an asshole to you. I said, but I said, do you understand how time zones work? And I'm like, I'll explain it to you. I really am not trying to be a dick. And he's like, I understand how they work. I'm like, well, then you understand that it's not yet 2:48 p.m. on any coast, right? He's like, well, perhaps this is Pacific time. I'm like, you're not listening to what I'm telling you. I'm like,
that means it'll be 8:30 in the morning.
I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I can't believe I'm having this discussion with an employed human being. So we're talking and he finally kind of gets it, right? And I'm like, we figure out kind of what happened. And basically they say, he's like, well, this is as far as I can take it. You know, we're not showing the payment. I said, well, PayPal says it paid you. So this payment is somewhere. And he's like, well, I can put it in an escalation. You can get a call from WWE Corporate. And I'm like, is fucking like Kane going to call me? I'm like, what are you doing with your corporate? And he's like, oh, God. And he's like, well, it could take 7 to 10 days. I'm like, 7 to 10 days? I'm like, so what am I supposed to sit here and not have the network and just pay? And I'm like, there's so much confusion. I said, you know what? I said, cancel the fucking thing for me, and I will just re-up with a bank account, and I'll take care of PayPal on my own. So he's like, okay, I confirm it's canceled, blah, blah, blah. I said, are you sure I'm not going to get double charged in a month? And he's like, no, you will not be double charged. I said, can you send me an email? He's like, why would you want an email? To say what? I said, to fucking tell me it's canceled, because when I check my bill in a month and you charge me twice and I call and you act like this call never happened, like every other fucking company in the world that tries to hose people, I'm like, I want something in writing. And he never sent the email, but he gave me a confirmation number, which I'm sure will be not existent when I call in next time, because I have no confidence next month that I'm only going to get billed once, but we'll see. So anyway, so now I got to deal with PayPal. I filed a claim through them to get the $10 back, but... it is what it is. Luckily, I caught the cowboy because he had done PayPal too. And I happened to catch him right before his payment was going to be due at 3 o'clock or something. That's when he signed up on the 24th. So I was able to catch him and he switched his payment method to his bank account or credit card. I forget which one it was. So that's a little word to the wary. If you did use PayPal, you can actually go into the network account page and update your payment before it goes through. So if you want to go through and update off of PayPal, you may save yourself some trouble or put a balance in your PayPal account. I think that's where the issue came in, that it tried to pull. I didn't have a balance. PayPal pulled it from my checking account like it normally does, but I guess the network gives you like 10 seconds to have it available or something. So anyway, I don't want to waste any more time on it. Just a word of the warning to people out there. If you're using PayPal, be aware of this could happen. And someone may try and take you to the fucking time warp matrix or something. But like, I couldn't believe that what he was saying.
Would you like a John Cena foam finger for your troubles,
sir? I'm so glad we're recording tonight because I didn't want to forget the story and I want it to be immortalized on digitized tape here. So I wanted to be sure I was able to get it out there because I was just shaking my head and I'm like, you can't be serious at all in any realm of anything.
Oh my God. They were too busy putting out yet another John Cena t-shirt. So there's more important things going on right now. Because he just had a new t-shirt a month ago.
I mean, it's clear that it's a separate company, right? I mean, they're not...
Oh, it's got to be. It's got to be some third party. It can't be a bunch of...
So, I mean, it's clear. But I don't know where this guy... I mean,
I don't know. Maybe that's what Kofi Kingston's doing now.
And he didn't sound to have... You know, he didn't sound to have an accent. So then I was trying to think maybe that was where the time issue was coming in. I don't know. The whole thing was just weird.
Sir, are you in the Ukraine?
Very bizarre.
Are you getting bombed while you're getting blown up while you're... Really bizarre. Oh, God, what a mess.
Yeah, never mind. I'm not going to say that, but go ahead.
Damn it. Well, you're all right now.
And yeah, I'll tell you something.
So. Well, yeah, I have the stream going too. I tell you, the stream is picking up. But... You and I talked about it this morning on our little chat thread with our rest of our admins that today they had like back-to-back Bash at the Beaches on today. Yeah. And
I figured once the trial ended officially, they'd start to make it a little bit better.
I guess, yeah, like Friday they had four of the Legends shows, and then this morning they had like 12.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna start
the house. Yeah, the house shows are beefing up. Did you see what
I'm hoping the ECW TV archive gets beefed, because I wanted to watch those in order, Yeah. And I watched a few, and then they're missing a gap. So I really wanted to try and watch them.
Oh.
Well, it relive because I've never really seen a lot of those. So
maybe Paul sold the VHS tapes to a pawn shop or something in 1997.
Right, why don't we dive into this vault, Scott?
Let's dive in because I've been looking forward to.
Hey, what is going on here?
You know, Mr. Sutton told me that you didn't bathe, and Jesus, he was right. I'd like to thank a PTB Nation member, Stephen Sutton, for keeping tabs of the of the vault while we've
also
been,
yes, PTB Nation writer is doing the honor report now for Ring of Honor.
Yes, he is. Yes, welcome. Welcome, Stephen Sutton. And he's been watching The Vault, and you stink.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Kind of nice, JR, that we are symmetrical here.
Yeah, worked out well.
Season 4 of the Place to Be podcast, and we are in a new year. Because guess what?
What?
It's time to play again. Good build there. Mm-hmm. I mean, pretty much JR clips.
Right.
But I tell you, I think we're in for a fun year, JR. I think in the pantheon of pay-per-view calendar years, this is a lot like 96.
I think it's
Maybe not 97, but.
I think it's even crazier. I think this might be the craziest year we've reviewed. I mean, 2000 was great. 2001 mm-hmm. was interesting. Mm-hmm. 2002 is just crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Like, every pay-per-view, there are radical changes going down.
Yes.
Company name changes, new characters, old characters, major landscape shifts, debuts, retire. You know, there's so much
mm-hmm.
in this year that every show, I feel like we're going to have like big things to discuss. So it's going to be a very interesting year. I think probably the most interesting year we've done. I mean, 96 was interesting, but there weren't as many changes as this. That was more like roster flux.
Yeah.
And a little bit of style change. This is like
infrastructure
changes, everything.
Yeah. And of course, tonight, inside the Vintage Vault on the Place to Be podcast, we bring you the 2002 Royal Rumble. And I don't think, well, for me personally, obviously, I was much anticipating the show, but in terms of intrigue, this may go down as one of the most anticipated Rumbles in a while.
Well, for you.
Well, for me. But no, I think in general.
You think
so? I think in general. Yeah, I think in general. I think there was a lot of, I don't want to say mystery, but, I mean, look at the buy rate. Well, let's go. Let's get to the stats. January 20th, 2002, live from Chad Campbell's patio, otherwise known as the brand spanking new Phillips Arena in Atlanta, Georgia.
It's been a lot of crickets around if you're in Chad's house.
Yes. First time, GR, we've entered the Peach State, and obviously a new building. So tell us about the, at the time, very brief history of the Phillips Arena.
Located at 1 Phillips Drive, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia, 30303. Broke ground June 5th, 97. Opened September 18th, 1999. Construction cost of $213 million, which should equate to $302 million, 2014 dollars. Who goes into these wiki pages every, like on January 1st, does someone just hop in and update all the dollars to their units?
I know, yeah. Probably.
This is someone's job, like 12:01 midnight. All right, Happy New Year. I got to go to Wikipedia and update all the dollar amounts.
I got to update all the dollar amounts.
Crazy. Yeah. Opened, September 18th, 99. So like you said, only opened for a few years. Concerts, 21,000 plus. Basketball, 19,445. Usually shows about, what, 6,300 about there?
Yes.
Tenants, Atlanta Hawks, 99 to the present. The Atlanta Dream, baby, 2008 to the present. Atlanta Thrashers of the NHL, the Georgia Force of the AFL.
So if the Hawks had 6,300, did the Thrashers have about 2,300?
And what did the Dream have, 400?
Yeah, baby!
I weigh more than there were fans of the Dream games.
Did they have polka dot uniforms?
Georgia Force of the AFL were there for a few years, and the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets played there for a year, 2011 to 2012.
Yes. Yep, and they have a new building now. So
do you know, Scott?
Yes, sir.
The first concert.
Billy Joel.
September 99.
That's always the answer. After I blew the Gundarino one.
Very close to Billy Joel.
Oh, Elton John?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Because Billy Joel opened the Gundarena in 1996.
Hosted the NBA All-Star Game in 03.
Mm-hmm.
U.S. Figure Skating Championships in 04.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Thrasher's first playoff appearance in the 07 Stanley Cup.
A lot of good it did them. They're back in Winnipeg.
Two UFC events. UFC 88 in September of 08.
Mm-hmm.
UFC 145 in April of 12.
Ah, I see. Okay. Not, and this will not be the last time they'll be in this building.
Mm-hmm.
But it is the first time they've been in the Peach State. Weird, never did a pay-per-view with the Omni. That would have been a real fuck you to WCW or even Crockett for Vince to stick a pay-per-view with the Omni. That would have been pretty cool. By the way, the Omni was the idea that the architects who built the New Haven Coliseum in 1969-70 thought of for putting the parking garage on the roof. It's because of the Omni. Your attendance. Now, you didn't say this is low. I wonder if they – was this – seems like a very low number. 12,915. You said concerts or what? 21?
Yeah. The only thing I think of is maybe it changed since then. I mean, I don't know if that's the
12,000
capacity now. Well, let's see.
They did have a big set.
Well, basketball held about 19,445 from 99 to 05. Actually, then it shrunk, so they must have added some boxes. Yeah.
But, I mean, that set... Remember, it had all the lasers and all that shit. So that's a good side of the arena that probably got covered.
Well, we talked about it though. I mean, they weren't really doing gangbusters business anymore. We're out of the days now in 99, 2000, 01.
Yeah, it's true.
First half 01, where everything was a lock, sellout, huge buy rate. That's changed.
Well, the buy rate here 1.69. That's pretty awesome.
Well, I mean, there's a couple of reasons. Obviously, it's a pretty loaded roster. Rumbles always do well.
Yes,
and of course, major return, some surprises, big title match. You know, there's a lot going on here, Rick.
Yeah, there is. And your announcers, good old JR, Jim Ross, and Jerry the King Lawler. Anything on Heat, JR?
Sunday night Heat? No, not according to this. Yeah.
Look how he said that. No, Thursday morning Heat. Look how he said that. Sunday night? Maybe.
Nothing there. First time, though, Scott, I thought they really embraced the history of the Rumble. In the video packages, they went back and, you know, they showed the clips from 88 and they moved through the history of the timeline. We saw it a little bit in the past, a little bit in 01. 2002 to me is the kickoff of the nostalgia era. And we'll see that come into play big time over the next couple months. This is how I always looked at it. The era that grew up with Hogan, Rock and Wrestling, Savage, Warrior, the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. This is when they were getting out of the angsty teenage years. Of course, that fueled the Attitude Era. And now we're getting into their early 20s where you start to kind of look back at the shit you liked as a kid. And I thought it coincided with pop culture and the world in general around this time. Started to kind of embrace the 80s nostalgia again. Like, it was kind of like, I don't say lame, but it was like late 99-ish, 2000, 2001, and then into 02 when you started seeing a lot of the websites pop up. Like 90s retro, 80s retro.
Yes.
A lot of that stuff really started to crop up around this time. So this, to me, was the point now where wrestling really fell in line pretty well with the rest of pop culture. Decided to re-embrace. You know, nowadays, nostalgia and retro is like cool. And it's been cool for a while.
Right.
But at this point, it wasn't. Like, 80s stuff wasn't all the rage like it is now, where everyone has a fucking, you know, Full House website. You know, it's different. And, this, to me, was the year that it really kicked into full gear. That, I don't know if it was just that whole era of kids growing up and hitting that age group, that age range where it really started, or if it was the whole, you know, transition from 9/11, you start looking back. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely 02, to me, is when pop culture in general started to re-embrace the 80s retro in early 90s.
I concur. Was there a TV show? Other than, I mean, out of the wrestling realm, pop culture-wise, you think there was a TV show that came out that maybe...
Well, when did We Love the 90s and that stuff? We Love the 80s. When did that stuff start up?
Probably around that time. Well, don't forget, 2000. Well, let's see. That 70s show had been on for about 3 years at that point.
I Love the 80s debuted December 16th, 02. So.
It was slowly getting there.
Right. Well, to me, that shows that it was in gear in 02 for them to create this show.
Yep.
On, you know, by MTV on VH1. So. I don't know if there was a full-on show, but I definitely feel like it was around this time where the history of, even in sports, I feel like it kind of kicked in too. But
right.
Wrestling for sure. And I think part of the wrestling piece of it was that there's no real competition anymore now. It's been about a year. And I think more people start to look fondly back at those days too. Like, cause now we haven't seen a lot of the guys we loved. They were all over WCW, you know, Hogan, Savage, all those guys were Piper, were all over WCW. Now they're all been gone. So I feel like we're starting to get a little nostalgic for it. DVDs were starting to creep into the, you know, the mainstream a little bit in late 01, early 02. So I feel like it was all this big, the internet was really burgeoning and people were coming up with different websites and, you know, sites like WrestleCrap and sites like that were really blowing up. So reviews of old shows, guys like, you know, our buddy Scott Keith. So I think it was just a whole time frame of starting to look back at older stuff, and it wasn't just for tape traders anymore. You know, thanks to the internet and everything else, it was really starting to become just part of everyday life.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it was, I think the first genre that really embraced it was video games. Because I remember, like, 02 was about the time, well, PS2 had been out for about a year, probably, at that point. Or was it a little older than that, PS2? PS1 came out, what, 97?
PS2 came out, yeah, it was, because I got one when I graduated college, and that was May of 02. So
it was
around there.
I was still living in with my roommate at the time, so, and we had one. So it was like 2000, to the early 01. But
no,
I remember people.
No, PlayStation 2, I don't think it was 2000.
No, must have been 2001.
Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. March 4th, 2000.
Yeah, I feel like we had one for at least 2 years. I moved to Norwalk in 03. So I figure it was at least 2 years that my roommate and I had a PS2. But I remember like people being like, remember ColecoVision? Remember Atari? Remember, you know, N64 and Sega Genesis, like that was starting to kind of creep up a little bit. And you and I have a mutual coworker, I still work with him, who's a big video game junkie. Brad knows who he is.
Yeah.
And he used to always talk about it. And I remember when I first started working there, he was telling me about it. And he had a little internet show. And and I think that was starting to gain steam, video games first. Then I think TV kicked in. And I think wrestling was part of that whole groundswell. I agree with you on that. I think video games was the first part, though. You mentioned DVDs. Well, as we are continue on through 02 and forward with our vintage vaults, I kind of want to look and see when the DVDs first really. I mean, obviously the pay-per-views had been coming out,
right?
But I'm curious when the DVDs started to come into play, not the like the comps. I'm curious to see. I don't remember if there were any.
First one I really remember in 02. Well, Steve Austin's What I think came out in late 01, didn't it? Early 02. One of the first ones I actually bought when I got my PS2 in May. I went and bought a couple of movies, and I got, ironically enough, the game DVD. So I know that one was out in early 02. So I think some comps were starting to come out.
Yeah, I think. Let's see. What else?
Well, think about it.
We'll think about it, and then we'll go on. So 2002. So early 2002. Now, early 02 in February, we'll mention this one because it's right after. It was only a couple weeks after this came out, is when they started the Attitude Collection.
Right.
The Austin 316 Uncensored came out. Undertaker, The Phenom. The Best of Survivor Series, 87 to 97. Best of WrestleMania 1 through 14.
Mm-hmm.
Three Faces of Foley. They all came out February 5th. Unforgiven 98, Rock Bottom 98, Austin versus McMahon, Best of Raw Volume 1, The Rock, Know Your Role, Eve of Destruction, TLC. They all came out on February 5th. So that's when they started to kind of regurgitate some of their tapes.
Right.
So right about that time, we'll document that as we go forward when the DVD craze really started to kick in. All right, let's dive in. Our opener, our first of four title matches, I think. Five on the undercard, four of them title matches.
Yep.
Our first for the World Wrestling Federation Tag Team Championships. Your champions. Well, since we last left, the Dudley Boys were the champs, and we left Vengeance. But that has since changed, JR, for on what ended up becoming a very memorable January 7th, 2002 Raw from Madison Square Garden. Something happened on that evening. A title change.
Taz and Spike Dudley.
What?
Defeated Bubba and Devon to win the tag team titles. And this is almost like a throwback. I remember like 94 when 123 Kid and Marginetti won the title.
Yep.
Like, oh, that always at like early first Raw of the year, title change, something crazy goes down. So
yeah,
big title change here. They were Spike and Taz position as big time underdogs, random team. And I thought this is the first of the random teams to really take off. We saw a lot of these random teams in late 01. Mm-hmm. But this is one that really kind of gelled, and you know, you had the ECW connection, and the crowd really liked both guys.
Right.
What did you think of Taz being positioned as an underdog again, though?
Almost
like on the level of a Spike, which I thought was kind of.
Well, that is kind of an insult. But he does get gold out of it. He had won a legit title. I mean, a hardcore title. He won, 63 right. times like everybody else. But
yeah.
It was nice to see him with tag team gold.
Oh, it was, but it's just kind of funny that he's positioned as like a little runt, like Spike,
yeah,
like
the
these
sake
two
of his
little
pride. Yeah, the sake of his pride is dignity. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. That's a bit much, but.
The whole Dudley, yeah. And I like the Dudley game plan here. They were looking to bully and kind of destroy both Taz and Spike. Then Spike's got the neck injury, he's got the collar on.
Mm-hmm.
Did you think this the finish was clearly going to be the Dudleys regaining the titles?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Kind of like we did, kind of like 94 when the. When the Quebecers eventually won him back. Same thing here. I thought that was just to spike that Garden Raw, which
right.
was jacked, as we'll see as the evening progresses. A lot of we'll refer to that show a lot.
Do you think that was the plan, and that Spike and Taz kind of got over a little bit and they changed course?
Maybe. I mean, obviously, there's another tag team that's you know, bubbling up to the surface of the mm-hmm. division that we'll talk about when we get to the Rumble match itself.
Right. There's a few out there that are starting to come around. I mean, the old guard is funny because they tried to force the old guard out, and mm-hmm. then it kind of happens on its own over the next few months.
Yeah.
Like all these teams that they were trying to force apart that didn't really work are all trying to kind of start a debut on their own. So the Dudleys pretty much wreck Spike for most of the match. They pound on the mm-hmm. neck, and then we get the upset finish. Taz comes in. And ends up getting the win by forcing Devon to tap out to the Taz mission. And mm-hmm. Taz wasn't in the match much, but he was pretty dominant when he was. So even though he
yeah.
was booked as kind of like an underdog character, I thought they did a nice job with him still coming off as pretty strong here, almost like the dominant of the group. So
yeah.
I liked that. I thought Taz looked pretty strong here. And I thought it was nice fresh blood in the tag division. I enjoyed it. It was a short opener, got the crowd going, and it was good to see new faces mixed into the tag mix mm-hmm. here.
Yeah, I agree. And I think this is when I personally started to get Dudley'd out.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I was getting burnt on them. Look, they put together some resume
mm-hmm.
in the 3+ years they've been with the company, or actually only 2, really. Don't you feel like they've been there longer?
Yes.
Technically, it's only been 2 years if you count when they debut. What, September 99? No.
Yeah.
October 99?
September 99, yep.
September 99. So we're talking
Actually, I think it was technically like August. I think it was like the end of August. But
yeah. Well, September, September.
They were at Unforgiven, yes.
Okay. It was late August then, I guess, when they dropped the straps to
I think they came in around late August. But
yeah,
about 2.5 years if you want to.
Yeah, but still, but I mean, didn't it seem like, you know, like 10 years?
Yes.
I don't know.
No, it felt like a long time. They've been on TV consistently. They haven't missed any time.
Yeah,
they're always in the center of the tag division, except for that one little stretch in 2000 when they were kind of out of the title picture and jobbing a lot.
Right.
But all of 01, they were the team pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Especially once Edge and Christian split up. So, yeah. I agree. I'm Dudley'd out as well here. They feel very, very played out. And mm-hmm. I was glad to see Taz and Spike retain and at least have something different on top.
Let me ask you this, JR. We talked about it a little bit after in our Unforgiven and No Mercy 01 vaults. I know 9/11 did change the mood of the company, but do you feel like here is when the Attitude Era really started to not tire? I don't think the Attitude Era ever really tired, but did you feel the epilogue begin or the final chapter of the Attitude Era begin here?
Not quite yet. Because a lot of the guys are still around.
Mm.
I think people were wanting something. Well, see, I want to talk about this on our next match, because I don't know if people were quite ready to embrace something new. I think looking back, you can see it. But at the time, I think we were being dragged. And
okay.
I think they were being dragged. Like, we saw the return of Vince as the heel character with the Kiss My Ass Club. And a lot of edgier stuff kind of came back in that was missing in the back end of 2001 due to the invasion. So
right.
I feel like they were trying to go back to the well a bit. And mm-hmm. I feel like fans wanted more to see more that it was the attitude stuff, the attitude guy. So I feel like we're being moved away from that. And at the time, I don't know if everyone was ready for it.
I think we'll probably, I'm going to probably revisit this question in about 4 months when we get to either Backlash, Judgment Day, King of the Ring, that three pay-per-view stretch. Because then it really, in my opinion, it really can. I still feel a bit of a change here. It just seems different than anything in 99, 2000, or 2001. Mm-hmm. Something's different about this
show. Oh, no, it definitely feels different.
You know,
I'm with you. I'm just saying at the time.
Well, yeah, at the time you still had all the studs. We're all there. All the big players.
I'm saying at the
there.
Time we weren't ready for that change. But when you look back now, you can clearly see it was happening.
Right.
You know, it's almost like we talked about in like 95, 96. Maybe at the time you didn't completely recognize in late 95 how much was changing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you look now back, you could say, oh, yeah, you know what? Everything was starting in 95, all the change that was coming.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely true. And maybe I'm noticing it a little bit more, but definitely we'll definitely revisit this question in April, May, and June. I think the roster itself shows that. But all right. So, instead we get the upset at the end. The Taz mission is locked in. Taz makes D-Von tap out, and the little underdog team, unlike in 94 and 95, the underdog team retains the tag team titles. Mm-hmm. Was it an audible? That's a good question. I'm still kind of kicking that around in my head. Was it an audible? I don't know. Maybe. I still think it's because there were other teams in the division that that they were burgeoning. But that's not a bad. It's possible. I don't know if they were doing that as much back then as.
I'm just saying it just seemed like something they would have done is put it right back on the Dudleys, and they didn't. It just seemed out of character. That's why. That's all I'm saying. Maybe it wasn't the plan.
Right. All right. Next up, we have yet another title match, our second of the evening out of four. This one for the World Wrestling Federation Intercontinental Championship. Your champion, still, you think you know me. You think you know me. And that is, of course, Edge, who won the title at way back at No Mercy when he beat Christian in the ladder match. And, has held it since, unified the U.S. titles at the Survivor Series, kept the belt at Vengeance, and against his opponent this evening, and that is William Regal. We were not sure how that match went at Vengeance. We thought it was a little shaky. Styles clashed a bit. Edge was struggling to kind of
a little bit better than I adapt. I remembered it though at the time.
Yeah, and now the rematch.
Did you like this feud was continuing, though?
Yeah, okay. I thought so.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
One thing I liked about Edge here is the promo before the match. Remember, I kind of took him to task back in November, December for having kind of goofy promos before his matches? I thought he was really good here. It was a nice kind of non-goofy, serious promo. He said he's going to use the chair to offset Regal's brass knucks.
Yep.
That had become the new kind of gimmick for Regal. We saw it at Vengeance. And he tries to use him. You know, he has him again here. Also, part of the story is Regal's broken nose, which we talked about.
Oh my god!
In the late 01, he was having serious issues with his nose, and he kept getting bloody noses constantly. And they make it part of the story here that Edge broke his nose, and he kind of targets it.
Right.
But I definitely dug the promo, and I liked how Edge looked to have more of a serious slant heading into this match. And did you think the fan support for Edge was starting to grow more?
Yeah, I did. Maybe I was catching it differently. I thought I caught a few Regal face pops. Not a lot, but
right. But was that more
little.
Pro Regal or anti Edge?
I almost think pro Regal. Why would you want to boo Edge? You
right.
know what I mean?
That's what I mean. Yeah. So yeah, I feel like the crowd support for Edge was
very solid,
getting stronger.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. There's no doubt. I think he was being positioned. I think they were setting him up for the beginning of the run. Which is why I thought this result doesn't bother me, and that is finally, after continuously being stymied in his efforts to use the Nux, he finally does.
And what cracks. What did you? I want to talk about a few things about the match.
Oh, sure.
I thought King was obnoxious here.
I thought he was obsessed
with the nose angle.
These first two matches, he was unlistenable.
Oh my god! Like he was like totally trying to make up for lost time. Like. He would not shut the fuck up about Regal's nose. Like, I mean, it's fine to talk about, but I mean, like, obnoxious about it. Oh, he's got a broken nose. Oh, look at that ugly nose. Oh, he's going for the nose. Let's stop it. Stop it. Edge is going for the... It's like, shut the fuck up. Oh my God.
It was terrible. Really, and that first match, I meant to mention this before, but you brought up a couple of more philosophical points. His first match with the Dudley, you know, with Stacy, I just wanted to, I know it's 12 years old, but I literally wanted to jump through my computer today and fucking strangle him.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the reason why it seemed so, maybe he's the reason that it seems dated now. It's like, it was barely funny in 99. And now it's like, now it's aggravating.
No, it was, yeah, it was, know? Really annoying in this match. I wanted to get into the story of Regal's nose. And he took me out of it because he was so fucking obnoxious about it. But yeah. Regal went right to grinding Edge down. I liked that.
I love that.
I thought this match, you know, you've talked a lot about Edge's style, how he doesn't have a style. I thought this match and this feud has added another style to the mix. This grinded out, hard-hitting kind of match. Like, we haven't really seen him in that kind of match yet, where he's really going to lay in some stiff shots and grind on the mat.
Right.
I thought Regal did a great job when he locked in the Regal stretch. I thought that led to a good fight with Edge trying to break out of it. Ref bump leads to the Nux, and like you said, that was a nice payoff to the build and Regal's power of the punch gimmick. I thought it was a really good heel win, and I thought this match aged really well, Scott.
Yeah.
I thought they meshed a bit better than they did in December, and let me get your take on this, because I remember at the time, and Ben Morse was talking about this today with us, I remember at the time, it was very, people were not liking this feud. And that was my mindset heading into these three shows that we see this trilogy of these matches, was that these guys didn't mesh. It was a bad use of Edge. Regal didn't look like he kind of fit in. People had high hopes and they were disappointed. And do you think because at the time, the WWF style was so different that this felt like it didn't fit? But in retrospect, we've become more kind of, I don't say tolerant, but we've come to understand and enjoy. We've watched more tapes. We've seen more guys use it.
Right.
It's been more prevalent on like the indie circuit in Japan, you know, in different places. And I feel like we've grown to really enjoy, you know, we talked about it with Will on the 94 WCW show. Is that Regal Arn match something you probably would have liked in 1999 or 2000?
No.
Right? But you've come to appreciate that style more.
Because we were given a very steady recipe of trash.
Right,
in mid-card matches.
Yes, garbage matches, high fight. And we're used to seeing Edge in that kind of match. And I think we thought maybe Regal would acclimate more to Edge's style. And at the time, it felt more like he was forcing Edge into his own style. I feel like Regal had that rep at the time, even in WCW, outside of maybe some of the smarter fans on the internet and whatnot. I think that there's a lot of fans out there that felt Regal was a guy that should be having great matches, but was very... didn't fit a lot of the guys. When in reality, if you go back and watch a lot of those matches, guys were either struggling to fit Regal, or we should be glad that Regal was working that style instead of him trying to adapt. So I think at the time, it felt like the shoe didn't fit because we were expecting an Edge match. Mm-hmm. And in retrospect, we got a Regal match, and it was actually pretty damn good. And I think it helped Edge grow.
I think so, too. And like I said, I feel like Edge, and I will continue to say this consistently throughout the next 9 years or whatever that he's a singles wrestler, is that he's a sponge. I think, you know, a lot of young guys have a style and they stick with it. Another guy who adapted as time progressed is a guy we'll talk about in a couple of matches, and I'll mention him when we get to his match, that changed his style as he got older. And I think Edge is doing the same thing. Obviously, Edge wanted a prolonged singles career. So wrestling like he did with Christian in those great tag feuds in 2000 with the Hardys and the Dudleys would have shortened his career greatly. Jumping off ladders and a lot more planches and things like that, where he used his body as a weapon rather than actually wrestling.
Right.
And that was fine in that era because that's what we all, again, we were kind of... fed during these last 3 years.
Yeah.
But now Edge is maturing, and being a singles guy, you've got to preserve yourself a little bit. So now you're kind of adapting to different styles. Now, this style that he learned and not learned, but adapted with Regal is going to come in handy in a few months when he starts a feud with a guy who wrestles very much like Regal.
Right.
And you know who I'm talking about.
Well,
to a certain extent.
Yeah, not really, just stiff. But
accidentally
stiff.
Right, but they're very similar in that style. But we'll get to that. Anyway, my point is I think Edge, I think the reason this time has made this match look better, just like pretty much the one at Vengeance, the one we'll talk about next week at No Way Out, is that we have learned now that Edge adapted and ended up being a very good, smart singles wrestler for this reason. And a guy like Regal's easy to adapt with because he's just so damn good. And that's why I think time has made this match better for that reason. He loses here as Regal finally does use the Nux and is your new Intercontinental Champion, but he needed that belt eventually anyway. But they're siphoning him to somebody else. Regal's nothing more than transition.
Right. And I think this was, part of what I was trying to say before, that we were being drag kicking and screaming from the Attitude Era, that we didn't want to kind of accept this style change or different kind of way to have a match.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And, but I think now we're okay with it. Obviously, we're 9 years or 14, sorry, 12 years smarter than we were then in terms of, we still weren't in that work rate mode. It's one thing to love, unless you were a real diehard of the Japanese style. And, we've talked with guys like Scott Keith who watched that and a lot of other guys. You and I never really were in tune to Japanese wrestling. We weren't really experienced it a lot here. We didn't tape trade it back in our day. So I don't think the whole work rate thing became, that's the word I'm thinking of, stylish for a little while longer.
Right. But just not on a widespread basis.
Right. And I think
it was
that
more like a subsect of
exactly
people on the internet.
Yep. And I think that changes in 2002. See, this is why this year is going to be so awesome for you and I to cover.
Yeah.
Because so many things are changing, and that's one of them.
Well, I think part of it
matches.
Well, I think part of it was that people were forced to look elsewhere because mm-hmm. we didn't have that force-fed competition anymore with WCW, ECW. Like, people were forced to go seek out alternatives. And even the indie bubble started to pop a little bit. There mm-hmm. weren't as many indies around. All of it was starting to go.
Well, not two indies, but we'll discuss throughout
right.
this year yeah. that two new feds open up
right.
in 2002.
But my point is that you were forced to look elsewhere and maybe turn to different styles as a result. But Regal wins the title. I think it was good to see him take the belt and to now let Edge chase again. And I thought this match was much better than I remembered it being.
No, I do as well. I do. I'm looking forward to watching the No Way Out match again because it's been a while. All right, so there you go. So we have two title matches so far. One retain, one switch. And William Regal is your new World Wrestling Federation. We're not picking on your company, but you have to admit, a lot of changes. Okay. Next up is our third title match of the evening. See, this is what I love about the Rumble. This is another reason why I love this show a lot, because it's the perfect Rumble card. The undercard should be almost mm-hmm. nothing but title matches.
Sure.
And then one
more Bushwhackers matches.
If you're
in the early 90s.
Twig and Berries played with. Was that the Rumble match or WrestleMania?
No, that was WrestleMania 5.
Okay. Anyway, and then one good anchor match
mm-hmm.
In terms of another feud, which we'll get to in a minute. But anyway, our third title match of the evening, this one, the World Wrestling Federation Women's Championship. Your champion is still my boy's girl, Trish Stratus, who won it at Survivor Series, retained at Vengeance, and now here takes on the one who made her debut at the Survivor Series, and that is Jazz. And I got to be honest with you, I thought she was losing here.
Trish? Oh, yeah. I thought so, for sure.
I definitely thought she was losing here.
It's a good little feud developing. It was kind of weird seeing Jackie as the ref, but Jazz had beaten Jackie to earn the title shot, so Flair named her the ref.
Mm-hmm.
Trish's pops, I thought, were building. Her hand was hurt here still, so it was kind of, that was the storyline coming in. Jazz survived one bulldog and then was overpowering Trish, but I liked Trish here showing the resiliency. I thought that was more of her character building, showing her being able to fight off a tougher opponent. Mm-hmm. And then what did you think of the finish here, the bulldog? A little kind of the sloppier one we've seen from Trish.
Yeah, Jazz kind of let go a little bit, or kind of she didn't really bring Jazz with her, but it wasn't good. But
do you think these wins were key and needed, or do you think they weren't believable? Should she have been chasing Jazz and losing around the horn and then finally getting the win, or did you think her actually winning these matches helped more than?
No, I think they helped her. I think she needed to be established. Because sadly, the diva division has a look,
mm-hmm.
and it's not Jazz, sadly. Well, Jazz been his worker, yeah. but Trish was their face. Trish was the one they were putting the chips in the middle of the table for, and so I think she needed these wins to legitimize her. And we'll see that eventually. All right, she's legitimized now. We can use her now as a chasing face, right. and we'll get to that as time progresses. But I had no problem with her winning these matches.
I mean, it's almost like we've said, it's a long-term investment,
mm-hmm.
and you're dealing with the growing pains now. But the lessons are there, the confidence is growing,
mm-hmm.
and you're kind of investing, saying, you know what, we know these matches may kind of suck, but we're loading the division up with veteran women mm-hmm. that know how to work a match, and we're letting our future stud learn on the job. It's almost like drafting a rookie quarterback and throwing him into the fire and saying, you know what? We trust that we're going to be shitty for a year, but it's going to pay off in the end. So that's what it always felt like to me.
Mm-hmm. And I think that was their point, and I don't think they cared. You know, it's just, remember, we're talking the women's division. This isn't like, I mean, we'll document through time whether or not they how many times they attempted this on a grander scale,
right?
You know, with a world title or something of that nature. But you know, the women's division, you can take risks.
Yep.
And do I think Trish was a risk? Absolutely not. She busted her ass to get to this point, and I think she's earned the opportunity. Jazz will be there, and you know, as you said, we'll document it that, you know, the title will move around a bit. But here, I was nice to see Trish get a little consistent. You yourself say, and I'm not saying that you're saying this, but you've said this over the last couple of years in the current product, that bouncing wins back and forth does nothing for anybody. And I think this is a case here. Oh, Trish will lose. Then she'll win. Then she'll lose. Then she'll win. Not in this case. You need her to look strong, particularly if you're banking your future on her. So I had no problem with it. And it was, you know, the match is barely 4 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The Bulldog is a little messy, but man, you know, guys blow moves too.
They're making their investment, and we'll see if it pays off.
Exactly. So Trish retains her World Wrestling Federation Women's Championship. We take a breather. Now we've kind of gone through the appetizers. Now we're getting to the tri-main event, if you will. Easily, this one is one of my favorite matches of all time. For so long. Be a lot of a lot of music on this show tonight. I just realized
yes.
There's gonna be music all over the place.
Very busy.
First match for the man. Woo! Since JR, one of your favorite pay per views of all time.
Heroes of Wrestling.
Exactly. Fairly Legal 90s. Nah, we never watch that show. It's crap. This match, Ric Flair's first company pay per view singles match. Since losing the World Wrestling Federation Championship to the awesome, late, great, future Hall of Famer, Randy Macho Man Savage.
Pretty crazy, huh? Jeez.
Yeah.
10 years almost.
10 years.
Yeah.
Yep. And this is his first actual match, period, on TV since losing to Mr. Perfect on that memorable Raw, January 25th, 1993. Now, we documented back at Survivor Series, JR, that he wrestled a lot after being on TV. He wrestled deep into, what, March or late February or late March. Wrestling Broadways with Brett.
God.
Man, somebody's got to have some of those matches on tape. Man, Broadways with Brett and, you know, he had matches with some other good guys in that, early on, too. But this is his first TV match. Now, who's he wrestling? Well, I think at first when you saw this combo, you're probably like, oh, God, this is going to be terrible.
I was excited for it.
I was very excited for it. He is taking on, of course, it's the Battle of the Co-Owners. And that is, of course, babyface Ric Flair, whose shares, of course, were sold to him by the McMahon children.
The Consortium.
What a great word. Don't you love how the WWF, not invents, but sticks, you know, consortium, facsime, facsimile, enigma, all these words that you never, you know, consortium. Who comes up with that in a storyline? Consortium. It's like, yeah, they just sold their shares to me. No, the consortium. Really funny. Taking on, of course, Papa.
He's coming to puke!
Yes, and Vince wanted to puke that night while he was tugging at his ear.
So this match made official on December 27th SmackDown after an intense face-to-face showdown. Flair knocked Vince on his ass, and it was officially on. It was around this time that WWF really started to embrace history, as we mentioned, and their vast tape library. The following Raw, they presented a great Ric Flair tribute video set to Kid Rock's Cocky, which would be the theme to this pay-per-view here. Later that night, Vince came out dressed up as Flair and mocked the Nature Boy. Flair was incensed that Vince was desecrating one of his robes and crapping on his legacy. So Flair came after Vince. Vince pulled out a lead pipe and smacked him in the face with it, busting him open. And a week later, Vince got the last laugh again as he and Chris Jericho attacked Flair and drilled him with the pipe one more time.
I love this build.
It was very good. It was very violent, these two guys. And I was really actually quite surprised when they – for some reason, I'm always surprised when matches happen at the Rumble and not at WrestleMania. So this was one of the first times to me that I was really shocked. I thought this would be a Rumble – a Mania match for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
And I remember being shocked that we were getting it at the Rumble. It seemed almost too big for the undercard of the Rumble. But I was glad we did. I really, really enjoyed the build, like you said. Did you think, besides the fact that maybe it was looked like a Mania match, did you think it was too soon?
Yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's only been, what?
A month and a half. Not even. Like 6 weeks.
Not even. Six weeks?
Well, I guess technically not if surprise. It's about 2 months.
Well, November 19th.
Yeah, 2 months.
So about 2 months. No, definitely it should have gone on further.
Do you think it should have been at Mania for control of the company?
Mm-hmm.
Or do you think they should have held off and not even had control of the company involved at all, just they fight at Mania?
Well, I mean, eventually, it depends how long you were going to... I mean, obviously, they ended up writing something later on in the year where Vince, you know, Flair is not involved in the storyline anymore, but would you have put the whole company up at WrestleMania and had Flair win?
No, I don't know. I wouldn't have done... See, I don't think I would have done the company things. You have what's coming later in April anyway... I just think if it happens at Mania, it's easier to build. The match that Flair has at Mania seems like one that could have been sooner, and the match he has here should have been at Mania.
It should have been a reverse.
Because this match should have led directly to what happens in April.
Yep.
It's kind of weird that it's here, but huge pop for Flair. Vince is juiced out of his fucking mind.
Oh, my God. Holy shit. He got an extra dose from the pharmacy in Tampa. Oh, my God.
Because we haven't seen him. Has he wrestled since 17?
No.
Well, didn't he have like a TV match? But whatever, he hasn't had a big time match in 17. So
yeah,
he's clearly taken some vitamins and said some prayers in the meantime.
Yes, very much so.
He is just zoinked out of his mind as he walks out here.
His skin is like paper thin at this point.
And I loved he shoves Flair down and does that awesome like Hogan posing. I thought it was really good.
Yeah.
And Vince, I was shocked. He like dominated Flair early. Flair is selling, doing his usual selling. Mm-hmm. Vince, you know, kind of clunky, but it kind of fits a Ric Flair match. Vince kind of stumbles around and Flair selling for him. Were you surprised that Vince dominated as much as he did?
A little bit. I do love Vince's perpetual goose step. I feel like he goose steps through everything.
He's very, very clunky and awkward.
Yeah, he is. But that fit Vince because he's not a wrestler. So he needed to look awkward and clumsy.
Exactly.
This is another one of those questions where you really have to think the answer out.
Right.
Logically, should Vince be dominating Flair? Of course not.
And I mean, Flair got like zero offense for a while. Like Vince went right to the weapons. Flair was gushing blood. And then way ahead of its time, Vince takes a selfie using Flair's daughter's camera. Flair's daughter and son, Reader at ringside. And he takes a picture of himself with the bloody Flair. Kind of a selfie before selfies were a thing. Yeah. And then Vince starts to work the legs, and Flair's just gushing blood. Vince gets the figure four on, and the crowd's rallying him. And what I actually thought was an interesting twist on the commentary, and then I'll let you get back to your point, they kind of pushed that Vince was more prepared for this style of match than Flair. And they played up like Flair almost was coming to wrestle, and Vince was coming to fight. And that kind of played out through the first half of this match, I thought.
Yes, I agree. I think the thing is, Vince is the one more desperate.
Right.
That's why. Flair has nothing to lose, but Flair's the one going in confident.
Well,
Vince's the one going in.
Yeah, but Flair was kind of the one looking for revenge. Because Flair was looking for revenge. Selling the robe. So I would have thought we'd get Flair coming out here for like 5 minutes. Batter, like almost like, it's a match we haven't seen yet, but I want to see a match where Flair comes out, beats on Vince for like 5 minutes. Vince is a bloody mess. Vince gets a little hope spot and takes over then. It was just weird to see Vince dominate him off the bell like this, like the first 5 or 6, 7 minutes. It was just odd. I mean, Flair gets his payback. He comes back, you know, Vince tries to use the pipe. Flair blocks it. Now Vince gets all bloodied up. Flair takes a picture of himself with the beating, or his kids take it, so we get the payback of that. Flair bashes him with the pipe with the figure four. And I liked the finish and the flurry, but I feel like even Flair's comeback didn't get a lot in. You know what I mean?
Maybe this was a Vince ego stroke. Like, yeah, you're going to win the match, but I need to make myself feel good, so I'm just going to beat the shit out of you, and then you could sneak it out at the end. Maybe it's just a personal thing for Vince. Nothing against Flair.
Yeah.
But I think maybe it's just Vince wanting to put the final nail in the, see, I beat the shit out of the NWA's boy. Yeah, he'll win, but who cares? You know, that's the Attitude Era thinking. Who cares if you won the match, as long as I look better beating the shit out of you.
Yeah, it was just weird. It was just odd match story. I mean, it was still a great match. It was a lot of fun. It was a really good brawl, and one I really enjoyed reliving. It is surprising to see Flair get so little in. I liked all the blood. I didn't expect this. It was almost like Steph and Trish a year ago. A match you probably didn't expect to be this good, but it worked.
I also think, what do you think? Maybe this is what Flair wanted. Don't forget, as we find out eventually, and we find out on the DVD, when the Flair DVD came out, his confidence was not great at this time.
Right.
He was very down in the dumps. He hadn't, you know, he wrestled with a t-shirt on at that last Nitro because he thought he was out of shape. He hadn't had a really good match in ages.
Right. It's clear maybe, he was deferring. It's clear.
Yeah. Maybe he's like, Vince, believe it or not, this is what I think we should do tonight. Let me get my feet wet. So I'm going to let you get your shots in. You're going to look goofy doing it and you're clumsy looking oaf, but no one gives a shit. The storyline is you're psychotically desperate to get rid of me and take back your company. So it doesn't, it almost, the fact that Vince is clunky looking almost makes it more believable. So I bet you Flair probably told Vince when they were playing in this match, look, I think this is how it should look. Believe it or not, I need to get my confidence back. And I think clearly by the end of this match, which is almost 15 minutes, he does. And I think he looks great in the last few minutes, slaps on the figure four. Vince even slapped on the figure four at one point.
Right. It is, I feel like Flintstones. It felt like Vince controlled 11 of the 15 minutes. More than that, even. And Flair got 2 minutes. It felt almost a little bit fluky.
Mm-hmm.
It was just weird. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't expect one of the greatest wrestlers of all time. And it was a brawl, and Flair's not a big brawler at this point. But it felt odd to me. And again, I'm not arguing it. I'm not complaining about it because I enjoyed the match. It was just kind of weird rewatching it to be like, wow, Vince really just beat the shit out of this guy for 12 minutes.
Yeah.
It was just kind of weird. It was almost like they acted like Flair wasn't Ric Flair. Even though they did the cocky video and everything else, it almost felt like Flair wasn't Flair. It almost felt like he was supposed to be an old owner like Vince and not a guy who could still wrestle. That makes sense?
Yeah, I do. No, it does. Like, he's at Vince's level instead of Vince at his level. It almost went in reverse.
Well, yeah, but Vince shouldn't be at his level.
No, it shouldn't. That's why they didn't do it.
But I'm saying they didn't act like Flair was legend Flair. It almost was like, oh, here are two owners. It's like, you know, fucking Ted Turner and George Steinbrenner wrestling. You know, it's like, it wasn't like Jason Giambi and Ted Turner wrestling. It was two old owners. Yeah, you know what I'm trying to say? I don't know if
right,
that makes sense.
Yeah.
But Flair was positioned as an old coot like Vince, and these guys were just out there stumbling around wrestling more than like more than Vince is trying to hang with one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
Right. That's a good point. Yeah. Again, I think a lot of it had to do with Flair's confidence, which was shaken at this point. So, I thought it was fine. I thought it was a great job to kind of get Flair's confidence back. I think he finally was back in the groove, and it led to a surprisingly entertaining match. And Ric Flair wins, still owns one half of the company, and Vince is bleeding and shaken and pissed off. But the feud does not end here.
No.
We'll talk more about that next week at the next vault. But for now, Flair is emotionally in control. They're still 50-50, but Flair is not going anywhere. All right.
Before our next match, Scott, we had an interview backstage. Stephanie was with Michael Cole talking about her husband dominating the Rumble. Kind of makes you wonder what his role will be. Will he be a heel? Is Steph now a face? Is Steph just trying to win him over and pump him up? Mm-hmm. Teases that she wants to beat up Deborah out of nowhere. And Steve Austin shows up.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God, the what chance? I was already done with it. It was funny the one time, like, back in September, but or August. I was already done with it. I was already done with the what's. It was out of control at this point.
I think what I don't say bugged me, but I think the one thing about it is Vince did Austin really need a cheap catchphrase to sell T-shirts and DVDs of all guys? Really?
Well, I mean, that's how he started, right? I mean,
well, his catchphrase was a legendary catchphrase. Right. This is dumb. This is hokey.
It was out of control at this point. The promo and yeah, I'm gonna walk to the ring. What? I'm gonna get in the ring. What? I'm gonna get in the ring. What? I'll be number one. What? It was just like. Out of control. It was just crazy. And I really wrote this down because I wanted to mention Michael Cole. And I talked about this on episode 5 of the Kevin Kelly Show last week. And Michael Cole, episode 5 or 4? What are you up to with those? 5, right?
Last week was 5.
Yes, okay. Michael Cole, frosted tips.
Yeah.
Overly frosted.
Oh, yeah.
Rolled up short sleeves like he's the Fonz. And just super fucking thin. Like he's coming out of Dallas Buyers Club.
You know what he looks like?
He's fucking, it was like.
You know what he looks like? He's a combination of the Fonz and Brandon from 90210.
He did look like he was trying to be like Brandon.
I was going to say Dylan, but Brandon was the one that cuffed the T-shirt.
He looked so fucking ridiculous.
He looked like, terrible.
He was trying to flex almost his arm, but it was so fucking stringy. It was just odd. And his hair looked awful. Like, it was just really weird.
It was bad.
It was really weird.
Wasn't this when Clemens was frosting his hair?
Oh, frosted tips were the thing.
Yeah.
Like 0102.
Yep.
Well, it was the thing for the people who missed the original frosted tips. Like, I think a lot of people were doing it like 99, 2000, and then guys like Michael Cole and Roger Clemens caught on in 02, 03, and that's when they started doing it.
Yes.
But yeah, odd stuff. Really odd stuff. He just looked like a weird motherfucker.
Very weird. And
it's like he was trying to look tough, and he just did not. He looked like a fucking idiot.
To Austin, of all people.
Yeah. Well, Stephanie, but.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. But otherwise, the promo I thought was pretty funny. The promo was pretty funny. All right. Time now for our final match of the undercard. In our final title match, the World Wrestling at the time it is now the World Wrestling Federation Undisputed Championship,
yes.
Of course, from Vengeance. Your champion, still the shocking Chris Jericho, taking on the number one contender, who had won it on a match, and that was The Rock. Of course, Rock lost one of his two matches at Vengeance. When did he get this title shot, JR?
You got it on the January 3rd Raw. Well, actually, that can't be right, can it?
No, that can't be right.
January 3rd SmackDown?
SmackDown must be, yeah.
He defeated Booker T. And a week later on SmackDown, he teamed with Rob Van Dam to beat Chris Jericho and test. Rock's first world title match at a Royal Rumble since 1999 when he defeated Mankind in the I Quit match.
Yes, with the 50 chair shots. All right.
Well, let me ask you this off the bat.
Okay.
Jericho on the way out and in the build to this.
Mm-hmm.
Still felt like he was being built as an unlikely champion.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't feel like he was being still booked strong.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like a guy that was, we still can't believe this guy's world champion. How's he world champion? I can't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, didn't it feel more like that to you?
Yes. And I think some of those promos pissed me off.
Yeah.
There's a promo in the build before the match where Jericho's standing at this is not a joke. I am not a joke. And it's like, oh, now you're making yourself sound like
right.
one. That
yeah,
promo
yeah.
was written so poorly. I hated it. Rock was such a douche in these couple of promos. And then he tries to, like, I am taking it seriously. And then he does the TikTok, which annoyed me, which he blatantly stole from the Kurt feud the year before.
Mm-hmm.
I hated a lot of the build. I hated it. I did think it was time to start treating Jericho like, I mean, yes. Do the next two pay-per-views kind of legitimize him? Maybe that hadn't happened yet, perhaps. But I thought it was going way over the top in terms of, all right, we get it. It was an upset at Vengeance. We get it. Can we stop treating the guy like shit and accept him as a legitimate undisputed champion and move on to, like, you know, the feud? Let's make the feud really meaty. Because it didn't seem like a fluke when he was a tweener babyface at No Mercy and beat him for the WCW title. That wasn't a fluke.
Right.
But now that he's a full-blown heel and it's the big title, now it's a fluke.
Right.
It's
yep.
bullshit. The Agreed. Whole thing sucked. I hated it. Didn't like it at all. Having said that, well, unless you have another point.
Did you? I got a lot of points.
Oh, well, go ahead. Keep going.
Were you going to go to the end of the match, or what were you going to do?
No, I was going to talk about the match in general, but, okay. But go ahead.
Yeah, I thought Rock was pretty good. I thought he was aggressive and fired up, going right at Jericho. You could tell he thought this may be one of his last chances, Jericho on the defensive.
Mm-hmm.
I will say this about Jericho. Even though they built him as what seemed like a weaker champion, I thought he seemed more confident here.
You stole the fucking thought right out of my mouth.
He seems to be in a better spot mentally, more in control.
Absolutely.
He doesn't seem to be bouncing around and looking a little bit lost.
No doubt about it.
Or forcing moves or overcomp. Like, man, we talked about in the last few shows, like a baseball player that was thinking too much.
Mm-hmm.
He seemed to have that behind him now. He seems more natural again.
Yeah. I agree with you 150%. And you know why? I finally come to the realization, and we'll talk about it more throughout the next, you know, obviously 10 years that he, or 30, you know, 11 years that he wrestles for the company. I think he's just better as a heel. Just a better heel. His promos, let's put it this way. His promos, both as heel and face, are both very good. But I think his babyface promos are slightly better. Wrestler, definitely a better heel, my opinion. And I think, after watching this match again today, of the four of the quadrilogy, or quartet, I guess, that these two had, I put this match number two behind the SmackDown match, or a Raw match.
Yeah. Really? Those better than No Mercy?
Yeah, I do. I'll tell you why. I think that match is very good, but I just love the way the story was told better here, and I think it's because of Jericho.
Mm.
I think Jericho's confidence, I don't know if it's, look, the No Mercy match is great, and I would put it just after this one. But I really loved this match today, and I watched it again today, because of his confidence. I think he tells a better story than when he is selling.
Well, it's definitely a slower pace. Because Jericho, like we said, is in a stronger position here. I thought Rock's comebacks were pretty good, which plays to his strength. So I think you got a point.
Mm-hmm.
Rock is at his best when he's trying to make comebacks that keep getting cut off. We get Storm and Christian get involved.
Yep.
Kind of a good stable brewing, kind of backing up Jericho. Couple things I didn't like here, though. Before they come out, Jericho taps. Makes him look weak. The referee's not looking.
Mm-hmm.
Crowd got really hot for The Rock. Again, as we mentioned, the difference with this match, I thought it was more of a brawl than the previous ones.
Mm-hmm.
Get the Rock Bottom through the table. I thought Jericho, though, started to show more of an evolution. He fights off Rock Bottom into the walls, which I liked a lot in the ring.
Yes, yes.
That should kind of show that he learned from previous matches.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Patrick comes out after a ref bump, still working his heel ref thing right to the end.
Yes.
Rock gets another visual fall, this time a pin, after Patrick gets bumped. So now he's defeated Jericho twice. And then Jericho kind of semi-wins clean, but still cheats. But at least it's a kind of in a heel way. It's not interference. He just puts his feet on the ropes after a low blow.
Right.
But when you add it all up, the way he's presented pre-match, loses twice visually to the fans, and then has to use a low blow and feet on his ropes, it didn't make him look that strong. Yes, he beat The Rock. But, I mean, could you have given him at least one fucking clean win over The Rock? Did you have to have him lose twice in the match? I don't know.
That sucked. I agree with that.
Maybe once. All right, I'll give you a one. You want to have him hit the Rock Bottom, covers the ref, but to tap to that shit sharpshooter, and then again, it felt like.
Here's the difference. And this goes back to the continuing theory that I brought up earlier in the show when I said that the Attitude Era was reaching its final chapter. During the Attitude Era, all the main eventers were on even planes. So shitty, weird match. We've seen this a million times, JR, in so many main events over the last 3 years, but it's pissing us off now and not in 1999. Why? Because in 1999, mentally, and maybe subliminally, subconsciously, not subliminally, mm-hmm. subconsciously, we feel like those guys were equal, and here Jericho's still trying to prove something as a performer.
Right.
But we've been dealing with fucking shitty, dusty pins for 3 years,
yeah.
And only now is it starting to piss us off because...
Well, this is a guy that needs to not have
exactly.
that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And that's where I think the Attitude Era is starting to show its age. Because now these fucked up, dumb, dusty, shit, garbage pin things aren't flying anymore because the fans realize, look, Rock and Mankind, even playing field. Rock Austin, Austin Triple H, Rock Triple H.
Right.
All those guys were all even. Now you've got a guy that's really trying to get on that level, and you're doing the same fucking weird. And I know it sounds like I'm trying to talk myself out of saying this match was number two, but I still think it is. But now were thinking, wait a minute, what's with all these, why are you making him look like such a schmuck? Well, in 1999, these fake pins didn't matter. Well, yeah, but that was Austin. That's different. See, we're trying to justify it. But in reality, the same garbage fake pin Dusty finish crap, and I don't mean to rip on Dusty so much, but it's pissing us off because they're not yet on the playing field. Rock doesn't need all this shit, you know, oh, he almost won there. Oh, he almost won there. Rock doesn't need that in this match. But because they're booking the matches exactly the same way they've done the last 3-4 years, it's irritating us because subconsciously we know that these two are not on an even playing field. And that's their fault because they didn't book it as such going into this match.
Right.
And that's what we were, and we just made that point before, that this build was just Rock treating him like a piece of shit.
Yeah.
Rock didn't treat Mick like this in 1999. Not at all. Now, Rock was at a different state, of course. He hasn't. But the point is subconsciously, it's irritating us because it's the same match we've seen the last 4 years, although this time a guy that needs a more definitive win isn't getting it. It wasn't in the WWF's brain yet as creative to give heels strong wins on pay-per-view with the titles. There's always had to be some kind of chicanery is one thing, but fake pins? Oh, for Christ's sakes. That's so 1999.
Yeah.
That's why I keep saying that this pay-per-view I felt after watching it today that the Attitude Era was reaching its last chapter here, and it wasn't what it was because now you've got guys who we didn't mind in the mid-card because the mid-card didn't affect anything. We just wanted to see great matches. But now these guys are being elevated. Now we don't want them to be treated like vanilla midgets anymore. Now we want them treated like main eventers. And this match and the build of this match, it was not so.
All right. And a really fun match. I didn't think it was as good as the other two in October. I do think it was better than Vengeance. So if I had to rank the final run, I would say Raw, No Mercy, Rumble, Vengeance.
I say Raw, this one, No Mercy, Vengeance.
All right. Well, why don't we argue about it over break?
Let's do that. When we come back, who's going to face, if it's Chris Jericho, March 17th in Toronto for the Undisputed Championship? We'll find out. But first, a word. Pourquoi?
Because.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly from Ring of Honor Wrestling. Make sure you check out The Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. PlaceToBeNation.com. We'll be talking about wrestling in the past and wrestling today. Plus, be talking about all kinds of sports and pop culture, whatever's on your mind, too. We'll answer your questions each and every week. The Kevin Kelly Show, right here, PlaceToBeNation.com.
What's that? Chad, do you hate it when commercials one and run?
What do you mean, Parv?
Oh, never mind.
Listen to Where the Big Boys Play on PlaceToBeNation.com and find us on iTunes. We are the only WCW Supercard exclusive podcast.
Hey, this is Rob Naylor. Do you still enjoy pro wrestling? Believe it or not, I still do. So you better join myself and Will on the Google Wrestling Podcast exclusively at PlaceToBeNation.com.
Shit, I wasn't ready. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening and shit. Hey, this is Will. If you like listening to guys talk about old school wrestling, follow me and Charles on Wrestling with the Past podcast on Place to Be Nation.
So you got the script, yeah? You all got it?
Yeah.
Oh, this sounds terrible. The Titans are wrestling. Oh, brilliant. Sorry. The Titans are wrestling. Oh.
Pete, I'm a lead analyst for a show at Breakdown Matches.
Kelly, lead historian. I'm a jobber lover. Are you?
Johnny and I drink.
And yes, me, Pav. We watch old school wrestling and love it.
Titans of Wrestling. You know you want to hear it.
What's going on? This is the Godfather, Nate Milton, with an offer you cannot refuse. Each and every week you can join Marcus Vanderberg, Big Nasty Alfred Kunawa, and myself on the Kings of Sport podcast, available exclusively on PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop spot for the best in sports and pop culture.
What's your one-stop home for your pop culture needs? Of course, PlaceToBeNation.com. We have everything you could ask for when it comes to pop culture. Now first, wrestling. We're definitely your hookup for all show recaps, including Raw, SmackDown, Impact, Ring of Honor, all of WWE's other programs as well. We have previews, live blogs, breakdowns for all WWE and UFC pay-per-views. You want sports? No problem. Place to Be Nation has extensive articles on football, basketball, MMA, boxing, and baseball. From Andrew Reich's history lessons to the return of the hack to the Cowboys call, we have the best and comprehensive sports knowledge and opinions. With a loaded staff of hardcore pop culture writers, we also specialize in comics, TV, music, movie pieces. Of course, you can't forget Jen and Justin's journey through the 90s. You want podcasts? Well, look no further than Place to Be Nation, the home for the best catalog and variety of shows you'll find anywhere on the net. There's the Place to Be podcast, where the big boys play, the Brad and Chad show, Wrestling with the Past, Titans of Wrestling, Goodwill Wrestling, Richard and the Mailman, Grapple Talk, and the Kings of Sport with our good friend Nate Milton. Want to take a second to thank our supporters and ask you to check out their great sites. Graham Cawthon and the History of WWE.com, a complete archive of wrestling shows throughout history. Also, our friend Dave at TWFNews.com, your home for wrestling news updates and great conversation. Also, check out PileDriverWrestling.net for all the latest wrestling news and the home of the great Old School Wrestling Review podcast and much more. And while you're at it, if you want to chat with fellow fans about wrestling's past and present, check out Scott Keith's blog at RSPWFAQ.com. So for everything you need, your pop culture fix, check out PlaceToBeNation.com, the only place to be in the pop culture world.
Hey, this is Scott Hudson, and you're listening to the Place to Be podcast with Scott and Justin.
All right, Nation, we're back reviewing Royal Rumble 2002. First, let's take a quick trip through PlaceToBeNation.com. As you may have heard, episode 300, Extravaganza 3 years in the making.
Yep.
Currently up there as well. Vintage Vault Repost Razor Ramon. The WrestleMania 10 ladder match with news that Scott Hall's headed into the WWE Hall of Fame. Thought that was a good time to kind of repost Scott and I's review of his match with Shawn at 10. Kind of one of his marquee matches in his career.
Oh,
we've
absolutely.
Had all the usual coup d'etat. We have the House of Horror. Jeremy Nichols, we have all your reviews. Total Divas, watching Total Divas is back for season 3. Ben Morris and Jen Engel back on the beat. And of course, Stephen Sutton with the Honor Report. Ryan Everett, main event. Dan McGinn with Superstar. Steve Willey and Glenn Butler did the High Spot with their News of the Week. We had a new Comics Roundtable. We had a new Hard Traveling Fanboys. All Scott Keith's reviews. We had the PTBN main event, episode 5. Kevin Kelly, episode 5. And of course, Wrestler Snapshot, number 4. The Big Boss Man from Stephen Graham. Joel Barnhart, one of our new baseball writers, Scott, has been doing his previews of each division. Those are up now on PlaceToBeNation.com as well. Richard and the Mailman are back. Josh and Andy, episode 18. Let's get real. Back at it. Kings of Sport with their anniversary episode. Plus much, much more. PlaceToBeNation.com, your one-stop, only place to be in your pop culture world. And if you want or are interested in writing for us or joining the team, you can hit us up at info@PlaceToBeNation.com. You can like us, facebook.com/PlaceToBeNation, and at Twitter, Place2BNation as well.
Tremendous.
Indeed.
All right. We had a great match there as Chris Jericho retains his WWF Undisputed Championship with a win over The Rock. So as of now, Jericho's a champion. Of course, he'll defend the title again in a month in Milwaukee. But there is a slot open in Toronto for a championship match. Mm-hmm. Who will get it? Well, we'll find out right now. It is time for the main event of this Royal Rumble 2002, and that's the Rumble itself. And boy, what a Rumble it was. Huge anticipation. And that's because, and this goes back, JR, to what we were saying earlier about the undercard being full of different kinds of guys that allowed this Rumble to be really loaded.
Yeah, it was stacked. Which is funny, because you don't think of 02 as still being a stacked time.
Right.
You would think 2000, 01, but those Rumbles featured a lot of filler. 01 had a pretty good roster, but
yeah, 01 was
this
good.
Is probably the most stacked Rumble we've had since, shit, I don't know. Have we had one that's stacked before?
Well, 92.
92, I guess.
Yeah.
Maybe you can argue 97. That
yeah, I was about to say 97, perhaps. The I mean, to this point, 01, I mean, the three previous Attitude Era Rumbles, you can count 98, I suppose. But 98, 99, and 2000 were all shit.
Right. 01 was pretty good. But yeah. 02 is definitely the most loaded outside of 97 and 92, probably. As far as major names and even the undercard guys being pretty strong.
Yes. So let us begin with...
Is that your fax machine?
No, that was... Bing! No, that was just preparing for our theme. Oh. Okay. I thought you were going to say something. I had it on mute. All right. At number one, we have a guy who's been pretty decent 0-1. Kind of shunted down the card a little bit, but has been on TV consistently, and that is Rikishi.
Is that Rikishi? Boy, did he get fat. I mean, I thought he looked fatter, way fatter here. I don't know.
Yeah, his ass was
no, massive. Even his gut. I thought his gut was like a lot bigger than it had been.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And so he's number one, which kind of shocked.
Had he been off TV or had he been on pretty consistently? I don't even know.
I thought he was on. Well, he was with the... He was obviously with Hawk for a good portion of 2001.
Right, and then he turned face in May. Remember before Regal, he did the Kiss My... I think he got hurt again for a bit.
Then there was the Kiss My Ass Club, and then he came back. Yeah, that's right, because his big return
right.
Was that Raw stuff. With yes. Vincent Kiss okay. My Ass. So he had definitely been gone for a few months. Yeah. So he makes his return here, and he's number one. Speaking of returns, at number two, it's been a while since we've done this. So happy to see him back. Where's he been, JR?
He's been off TV.
Pretty much.
That's it. Gone.
Yeah. He was still with the company.
He made his last appearance at Backlash 99, moved on to WCW, where he became the bizarre character of Seven. Little boy.
Hi, little boy.
After that character quickly bombed, he wrestled as himself for the last 2 years until WCW went under, took some time off, and returned here under his most famous character. And... I thought he was back to kind of being the creepy, weird Goldust. Like, he was kind of stalking around and being a little sinister. Different than what we had seen kind of late at the end of his run in 99.
Yeah, which I think we needed.
Seeing him back?
Oh, hell yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Did you think it was weird that they tipped the returns ahead of time?
Yes, because when we get to a return later on, I would have been very... knowing it was coming was nice. I mean, seeing it was nice, but if that was a shock, boy, what a mark out. I am a little bummed that it was tipped. I am. That's because this is the match where the surprises are at its best. Well, next to Mania, I suppose. But this is where you want the surprises. Every year now, JR, that's your tradition where every 4 or 5 weeks or 4 weeks leading
into... Do you think it's more now, though, that we don't need them? We're kind of they're already adjusting to being out of that competitive era? So we're kind of now, hey... We gotta get people tuned in.
I think
you don't think biting that nostalgia bullet a little bit, you know, saying, oh, you know what, this is kind of the thing. Announcing these guys ahead of time might be kind of cool.
No, I still think people like. Oh, maybe you can announce one of them. This one maybe is not as big a deal to announce, but the one later on, I really think should have been a surprise because he's only been. I mean, Goldust has only been gone.
Seems like forever. So yeah.
But it's only been technically just under three years. The other one's been much longer than that, and I think him being a surprise would have been awesome.
Right,
and we'll get to him in a little bit. So Goldust is one, is two, and Rikishi's one. They go for a while. At number three,
I know, me neither. But he's still hanging around. This guy,
he is, and that's your boy, Chad Campbell's guy. Mm-hmm. I think there should be a statue in front of the new Braves ballpark, and that is the Big Boss Man. He hasn't been on camera since fucking a year and a half almost, right?
Backlash 2000 was his last pay-per-view.
How was he not during the invasion? Was he sick?
I think he was hurt a bit off TV. I think he did a lot of kind of the heat stuff. And just a guy bouncing around, and he's back here still in the cop gear. But that would actually go away a little bit. And he would go back to his old Big Bubba suit a little while in 2002 and form a kind of a cool team that we'll talk about later. He appeared on the Sunday Night Heat match at No Way Out, but this is the last official pay-per-view appearance. He was sent to Ohio Valley to train some young guys, spotted at a TNA show in 2003, but was never on mainstream TV again, and sadly, on September 22nd, 2004, Ray Traylor passed away from a heart attack at his home. And, you know, kind of a sad end because he's a guy that, as the nostalgia continued to grow, and you look nowadays at all the guys that came back and had been involved, and he's a guy that you know would have been on a lot.
Would have been involved
at all these Raw anniversaries and throwback pay-per-views and everything else. And I'm sure someday he'll go in the Hall of Fame, but it just kind of sucks that, you know, he's not around to do it. And he's a guy we've really gained a high appreciation for.
Yes.
When we watched the 94 stuff with Will and Charles, and we kind of relived those Vader matches and everything. Stephen Graham did a really nice job with his Wrestler Snapshot, looking at five unique Boss Man matches. So definitely a sad way to hit for him to go out. He had a nice little bounce back run here with WWF, something we probably didn't think was possible. Had a real solid few years back under his home office last solid 3.5 years. Got a couple main events and just stuff you probably didn't really expect him to do. So, Scott, do you have his record in front of you there?
I do.
All right. Well,
2-7 at the Royal Rumble. 5-1 at WrestleMania.
Yes, very good Mania record.
Love that. 2-2 at SummerSlam. 3-5 at Survivor Series, and 3-5 in other final pay-per-view record, 15-20. Would you say, JR, and I know you very well, would you consider him not best, one of your personal 10 favorites ever?
Probably not top 10.
Not top 10?
No, he's up there, though. I always really enjoy
him. Was he one of your favorite action figures?
Yes, he was. I mean, I don't know. I have to rethink it. Maybe he's at the bottom of it. I mean, I really liked him with the Twin Towers. Obviously, I liked his early 90s run. You know, we talked about some of those great matches he had with Barbarian, matches you didn't really expect. And then his really good run in WCW early on and his comeback, how great he was with Vince early on with the corporation. So, yeah, he had definitely one of my favorites, one of the best big men of all time.
And a good company guy, too.
Yeah, yep.
All of the places. He was loyal everywhere. Loyal in NWA back in the day. He's got to thank the Dream. Because remember, Ray Traylor was a nothing jobber in the NWA in, what was it, 87 or whatever. Dusty found him and picked him from the heap and remade him Big Bubba Rogers. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, my boy, Big Bubba Rogers. And I was very sad when I found out he died. I was bummed.
Very.
I hate so. No, we don't like seeing anybody die, but just those 80s favorites. Mm. That's when it started to really. Well, it snowballed before that, but actually, there's a couple in 2002 that really upset you. And then 2003, it gets even worse. Mm-hmm. But this one was a tough one, just because I love Boss Man, and I think we all did. He's just one of those good company guys. A lot like our man John Tenta. You know, just a good company guy. Loved what he did. Loved being a good, he was a great heel. He was a fun, happy baby face. You know, he was just good at what he did. He didn't have to put on 5-star matches or whatever. He was just a great character and was bummed. Bummed when he passed away. Sucked. 15-20. 35 pay-per-view matches. That's a lot.
Yeah.
It's more than I thought when I first brought up our old review.
He was constantly on every month after month. And of course, eulogized just a couple weeks later.
Yep.
Raiders of Visual, the movie.
Yep. That's right. That's right. That's right. He officiated the great wedding. All right. So he comes in at number three. Number four, one half of one of the tag teams we've been talking about that's trying to get phased out, and that is the APA. Bradshaw comes in at number four. Number five, a guy
Bradshaw,
who,
though, I thought getting some shine here. Like, you could tell that they were trying to push him, that they had plans for him.
Yep.
Because he definitely gets a little bit of a solid run, and he lasts 7 minutes. So not bad.
Well, you could tell, guys, when you're I realized it today. When you're breaking up tag teams, when you have the guy you want to be your star and the other guy you're just kind of phasing out, it all depends on where in the Rumble match you put them.
Right.
Here, Bradshaw comes in with not the jobbers, but like lesser, and then when they bring Farouk in later, he's in a part where it's like, oh wow, Farouk's with all these other guys. You know.
Right, right.
But we'll get to him in a minute, we'll explain. All right, so Bradshaw comes in at number four, and number five, a return. From the invasion, and that is Lance Storm. We saw him earlier in the show trying to help Chris Jericho in his title.
Not much of doing anything here, really.
No. At number six, one of the trainers of Tough Enough, Al Snow.
I like how he pops up whenever they're trying to push the show. He's like, oh, yes. Al Snow, trainer of Tough Enough.
Well, because season two had, I think, the middle of it? Had it started? Had season two started already? Something like that. Season two was going on, I think. At number seven,
So Tough Enough season two.
When is that unbelievably hideous match? May, right?
Yeah. That it was around. I think it was on. I think it was airing at this point.
I think it ended before Mania. I think it ended like early March. I think they picked the winners. Anyway, at number seven, one half of a tag team that's starting to build over the last couple months, and that's Billy Gunn, who's still coming out to his awesome The One music, although that would change soon.
Right, yeah. He's got that still. So him, you know, they talk about his tag team with Chuck Palumbo, but he's not. They're not really doing the gimmick that gets you. It's just kind of still...
They are both wearing the same colors, though. They both went to the red tights, red boots, both blonde, very blonde.
Mm-hmm.
And when we get to Palumbo, boy, his hair looked terrible. we'll get to that, though.
Goldust, by the way, still getting a nice run. 13 minutes he goes.
Who's that?
Goldust.
Oh, Goldust, yeah, still in it, yep. At number eight, you'd have to say, obviously, one of the favorites, and that is the freshly minted heel Undertaker.
And he gets a big pop, even though he's a heel, but that's because everyone... Loves what he's doing. He's been pretty awesome since he turned
heel. Loves the theme.
Which is funny, because he was a face, and he was, annoying, and everyone hated him. Then he turns heel, and he's fucking awesome. Now we got to cheer him, even though he's a heel.
Yeah.
I thought the early part of the Rumble here, up until this point, was a little bit slow.
Yes, but
I thought the crowd was hot, because even the lower, like we mentioned, the lower-end talent at this point was still really good.
Yes. No, absolutely. Absolutely. So, but yeah, I think the... Yeah, and I think the crowd was kind of getting their legs back from after the title match, too.
And Taker just wrecks shit, cleans house, stands alone. It was a good time to clear the deadwood, kind of the first third of things are done.
Yep.
And Taker stands tall, kind of really the, as we'll see, maybe the only major star we get for the first 20. I mean, honestly.
Yeah, really. Yeah. This Rumble is heavily backloaded.
Right.
Heavily. All right. Nine and 10 back to back are one of the, as you were talking about earlier, JR, tag teams that they were trying to force apart and realized, wow, that sucked. Let's just put them back together. And that is Matt Hardy at 9, Jeff Hardy at 10. Going back to the old Demolition 89 scenario there.
Right. Well, they come out, and the Hardys are in. So they kind of just brush the split under the rug. And I thought those were the best. So Lita's out, and they kind of reunite her and Matt first. They have some fun spots with Taker. Lita's involved. And then Jeff comes out. And to show some unity, they hug, Jeff and Matt hug, and then they all beat the shit out of Taker, trying to get some revenge. And they're trying to get revenge because, as we mentioned, after a disappointing outing at Vengeance, the Hardy Boys were taken off TV to recharge the batteries. On December 17th, Raw, Taker defeated Jeff Hardy and brutalized him after the match, eventually sending him careening off the stage with a last ride. He would then send Lita off the stage after him. Matt had been hosting Raw at Dirt F New York and was shown flipping out as his brother and girlfriend were brutalized. Later that week on SmackDown, Taker finished the job by crushing Matt's throat with a chair and putting him on the shelf as well. The Hardys are gone until they enter back-to-back here. And as we mentioned, all kind of assault Taker. So this really wraps up a lot of things. It brings an end to the Hardy Boy split, brings an end to the tension with Lita, and now pays off the whole beatdown that Taker sent them to the sidelines with.
Right. Yep.
So do you think it was smart to get them off TV and bring them back here united?
Yes. Because it was clear that their singles feud was terrible, so maybe they just weren't quite ready for their singles push yet. So maybe just put them back together for a little while, and then maybe rethink how to do this. So I was fine with it. I was fine with it. They needed to do it for the Dudleys more than they needed for these guys. But Jeff Hardy was just one of those guys, one of those personalities that was just shining right now, and maybe he was trying to break off on his own. But maybe the feud with Matt was not the smartest thing to do to kind of escalate that. So
I like how they paid off the beating with Taker just shrugging and dumping both of them out, just continuing his dominance. Like, they got all their spots in, they did all they could, and Taker just dumps them.
Yeah. All right. At number 11, we have another debut. And who is this guy, JR?
This guy is a maven.
Is a maven.
Maven Huffman. No relation to Booker T. Huffman. First male winner of Tough Enough. WWF decided to jump on the reality show bandwagon, as we mentioned, have a competition where unknowns will get a chance to show their stuff, win a contract, and the first year would see Maven and Nydia win the men's and women's titles, respectively. We'll see Nydia eventually, but Maven earned a shot here via his win, and you can read all about the Tough Enough 1 casting special if you go back to JR's treasure trove on PlayStation.com.
That's right. I reviewed that. Should have been in that class, JR.
Mr. John Walter, sir.
Damn it.
Got screwed. So Maven comes out,
Let me ask you.
Yes.
If he won, would you have come out as his manager here?
I would fucking think so. Who knows? So big spot for Maven in his debut. Gets to go one-on-one with Taker, but Lita and the Hardys are still involved. They get back in the ring, beat up Taker. Taker gets distracted by Lita. Maven dropkicks Taker, and he gets eliminated.
I was stunned.
This was an awesome, awesome stunned. Moment. I mean, yeah. If Taker's not going to win, this is a great way to have him get eliminated and give Maven something that will carry over for his whole career. Like, this is a selling point for him. He eliminated Taker. I thought Taker's selling was awesome, just sitting on the floor with his eyes wide open.
Yeah.
And Maven has this awesome celebration going, and then he realizes what he did. And he realizes what's coming. And he's like, oh, shit. So Taker gets up. Scotty Two Hotties out next. And one of the greatest moments, and I was watching this with Dan McGinn on Friday night, and we were just dying laughing, where Scotty's dancing, doing this absurd dance. Taker gets up, just punches him in the face, and knocks him out, and then gets back in the ring. And just beats the shit out of Maven. Just pounds him, tosses him out of the ring. They go backstage. They fight all around the arena. He throws him through the fucking popcorn machine.
Yeah.
Maven's just all bloodied up. And I thought Taker completely carried the first half of this Rumble. I thought it was awesome. A complete 180 from a year ago.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I think the heel turn was a rejuvenating that he needed of character, big time. Yeah, Maven, and to Maven's credit, boy, he sells this. I mean, he got fucking brutalized.
It was
pretty awesome.
The whole thing was awesome. I loved all their selling, everything else. I mean, Taker's selling was awesome. He was just great.
Yep. Yeah, no, it was very cool. And I think when we talk about some of the other guys later, he kind of helps add to the build of the other guys, too, in this Rumble, just based on his presence. It was just awesome. It was awesome. Taker, I really do think that Taker just was so... Again, I don't want to say he dogged anything, but I really do think he could not stand the whole invasion storyline and just couldn't wait for it to be over. That's just what I think.
I think he just needed the heel turn.
Mm.
I think he was done with that character. I think he needed something new to dig his teeth into, and this has been great. The weird fucking facials, just the crazy old man just beating the shit out of people and doesn't give a fuck about anything. Like, that's the...
Did the short hair bother you?
No, I loved it.
Yeah.
It cleaned him up. He didn't look as stringy and old. I thought it was great.
Guy,
I thought
yeah.
it completely rejuvenated him with the look and the change. And I mean, he was basically doing this gimmick throughout 01. It just didn't make sense with him being a bully as a face. But now him being a bully as a heel is so much better.
Yeah, seeing with a bully as a face, meaning he's just burying the roster. You know? All right. At number 12 is a guy that's kind of been putzing around here and there, and that is... former Too Cool member Scotty Too Hottie.
Well, we mentioned him. Remember Taker punched him in the face?
So forgotten. At number 13,
another
guy.
By the way, there was a great sign here that said Ben Mark, which I assume was for Morse.
Of course. It's like Ben Steve. It was pre-Ben Steve. Maybe yes. Mark was somebody. Maybe somebody confused him with a guy named Mark, like I confused him with a guy named Steve. All right. Number 13 is your World Wrestling Federation European champion.
Oh, still needs a new look. Desperately.
Still needs the belt. Yep, Christian. Still has the stringy hair and the fishnet indie tights and
yes.
just a mess. At number 14 is a guy who suddenly has become kind of rejuvenated.
Yeah, where the fuck did this come from?
I think the invasion ending helped him. That's
yeah.
It's me. It's DDP. Diamond Dallas Page, who obviously buried beyond recognition. The dirt kicked in his face, his eyes, his mouth, his ears, everywhere.
He gets a nice run here. He really does. Like, he's in for a little bit. He gets a little pop and I thought it was kind of cool. It was a nice little slot for him, and I liked it. He definitely was impressive.
Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Yep. At number 15 is the other half of...
had to hear it at least once.
For the other guy.
Chucky!
Yeah!
Of course, it's Chuck Palumbo, one half of Billy and Chuck, the new team, but I thought it was... what did you think of JR's...
Billy and Chucky, like
so
snooty.
Bad. And Jerry, and Jerry's like, why do you got to say like you hate him? Yeah. I had a neighbor named Chucky. It's like the whole exchange was just was nauseating.
So I'm guessing the original Billy and Chuck gimmick was supposed to be that they were just like kind of like punks. I think was that what it was like?
Yeah,
Billy and Chucky. I don't know, like
Billy
JR kept
and Chucky,
doing that. And
so
of course
bad.
It would quickly become just Chuck. But for a while here, it was Billy and Chucky.
Well, God did
Billy and Chucky.
Did Palumbo's hair look terrible?
Oh, brutal.
Oh, my God. I thought the dye ate it. He's so blonde.
Yeah,
it was
he's
so...
another guy that needed him and Christian, both in the same boat. Needed
yeah,
a haircut badly.
Sport clips. All right. At number 16, another not a return, really, but a rebirth, if you will, with the APA, not APA, with the RTC finished. So you've been gone pretty much since, what, mid-April, I guess? And that is no longer good, but God.
And he's gone legit, King!
Yeah, yeah, legit. What does that mean?
Well, he's it's supposed to be like an escort service now. He's not a pimp anymore.
Yeah.
He gets a big pop. He's got lots of Atlanta whores with him. There's like 20 of them all come out.
Yes.
And like they spend 2 minutes just dancing the aisle, going crazy.
He
and
goes
the
back
fans
and
seem to like it. Yeah,
he,
I mean,
he walks up, walks back, walks up, walks
and that's
back.
What he's good for anyway, right? So why not?
Yeah.
Why not do it?
I mean, milk it, give it a good pop. Yeah. Walks up, walks back, walks up, walks back. It's pretty funny.
So DP gets eliminated during this, by the way. so much for his big push coming.
Yeah, exactly. At number 17, Matt Rotella's favorite guy at this time, the hip hop hippo himself.
Jeez.
Albert, of course, he is teaming with Scotty Too Hotty now. So he comes in at number 17. At number 18, we have another farewell. Gone are the dyed walrus tusks.
Mm-hmm.
And that is Perry Saturn.
Final pay-per-view appearance.
Final pay-per-view appearance, JR.
Suffered an ACL tear in April, was released in November, spent the next couple of years working in TNA and the WWA in Australia, and then he vanished. At the time, his last known place was in Long Island, but no one had seen him since 05. He was supposed to make Shane Douglas's hardcore homecoming show, and he finally kind of popped back up. He had that weird story where he saved some lady from getting raped and got shot and all this fucking crap.
Yes.
He was all pilled up and drugged up, but he seems to have kind of gotten himself back.
Yeah,
on the right track. Final record, Scott, 4-9, 0-2 at the Rumble, 0-1 at Mania, 1-1 at Survivor Series, and 3-5 at other events. So, I guess, what, third ranked Radical when they came in? So now, you know, we're down to no Radicals. Well, Dean, but he hasn't even been on TV. He's kind of working backstage. Saturn gone now after this. In April, Eddie Guerrero been fired, and Chris Benoit on the shelf. So four guys that came in very ballyhooed. In January of 2000, 2 years later, none of them are on TV.
Yeah. One of them, you know, obviously through no fault of his own. One of them self-destructed, and two of them, I mean, Dean's career was probably in the end by the time he got here anyway. I think he was just the hanger-on, and Perry was better off as a tag team guy. They should have just got, I always said that they should have brought in Cronus and redid the Eliminators. That would have been awesome. Just to clarify, JR, the post- a disappearance situation. Let's see. Furthermore, due to the fact that he had missed the funerals of two of his good friends and the funeral of his mentor, Killer Kowal, some speculate he may have been dead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was a big rumor for a while.
Yeah. At the time, he was reportedly last spotted in Mason City, Iowa in 2007. He had been living in an apartment owned by former wrestling manager Sonny Ono. In November 2009, the Wrestling Observer newsletter reported that he had been found alive and well. In June 2009, he married a woman named Lisa Marie Kuhlmeier, and they reside together in Albert Lea, Minnesota, with her two children. He's backstage, actually, at the 2010 Bragging Rights pay-per-view. Bill Apter interviewed him about his disappearance in 2010. He revealed that after being shot by a firearm, he became addicted to meth and was homeless for a few years. Imagine a fucking homeless guy as big as somebody scared shitless of a guy walking around 260. He claimed to now be sober and expressed interest in a return to the ring depending on his physical condition. It was announced in September 2011 that he was scheduled for his return match that October at the AWE Night of the Legends pay-per-view in Fishersville, Virginia, facing C.W. Anderson. He won his first championship in over a decade when he defeated Eric Cannon and Sir Bradley Charles in a triple threat match for the 3XW Pure Wrestling title on April 27th in Des Moines. In March of 2013, he wrestled at Jerry Lynn's retirement show for Heavy on Wrestling in Minneapolis. He competed in the opening six-man tag where he came out victorious.
Cool.
So there you go. Perry Saturn. All right. At number 20, I'm sorry, at number 19, of course, one of the heavy favorites.
Mm-hmm. And this now is the big names finally
start. Now the studs come
in. Outside of Taker, we really haven't had a big name in the first 18. No.
Nope, but at number 19, looking for his fourth Royal Rumble win and trying to do back-to-back for the second time in his career, mm-hmm. and that is Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Huge pop.
Yeah, big-time pop.
Out of control.
Yeah. Would you have considered, I mean, you're definitely a favorite.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah. You know. I think it would have been a shock if he won again.
Yeah. No, definitely.
He wastes all the deadwood. Another guy just
he finally ditches everybody.
Yeah.
At number 20, another return and a repackaging, Gone with the Right to Censor, but a guy who was still very serviceable and was still in pretty good shape, and that is, of course, and you could finally say it again, JR, Val Venus.
Rhymes with the penis.
That's right. He returns.
Yep, back in his old gimmick, so we've reset him and Godfrey. I mean, you're right, Scott. Mayo, too, really was putting away the... It's like, really resetting everything. All these guys is back in their old gimmick. So it's almost like a return to attitude, but a reset. It's like, maybe it's a mix of what you said. Like, you said this kind of felt like we're done with the Attitude Era. It almost feels like we're done with late 2000, early 2001.
Right.
It feels like we're going back to 99, early 2000.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it feels like we're done with what we've had the last year. We're kind of resetting back a couple of years.
Right. But in a more mature way. Like, yeah. Not as sloppy, kind of, you know, a little, like, more experienced. You know, not as newish. You know, not as new looking with these guys. And short hair and that kind of thing. So, at number 21.
And Austin looked dominant, by the way.
He was kicking the shit out of guys. Yeah. We're talking, like, 97 San Antonio dominant.
Right.
Chucking guys all over the place. At number 21, a guy who was highly thought of on the roster over these last, you know, 3-4 months, and that is Test.
Another guy jacked.
Yeah. Oh my God. You could see. Yeah. Another one who was. Boy, it was going around. That pharmacy was making
wide open
down in Tampa. Oh yeah, open on the weekends.
Doctor Zaharian was back in business.
Yes, he was. Yeah. That's for sure. He was passing something from the from prison. And number 21 was Test.
Time to play the game. It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. I won't
could make up your mind.
He's
you?
Back.
Mash up, baby. Mash up.
Triple H Mega Mix Mashup. Exclusively here at PlaceToBeNation.com.
That is right. Number 22. Well, of course, we talked about... Do we really need that much Mariah Carey?
Always. Used to it.
Yeah. So that's the one, huh? All right. Okay. I kind of like the other one. Was that the Chiffons?
My boyfriend's back.
What are they? The Chiffons or the Shirelles or one of those? Oh, God. All right. Obviously, fans, me, Cruel Tease that he was supposed to show up at Vengeance with the poster, did not, which was incredibly irritating. But then the song started. Thanks to the great Kevin Kelly. I think of him when I hear it on the radio. Ugh. And it was, of course, Beautiful Day by U2.
I hated that song.
Oh, it was fucking great.
First of all, it's a terrible song.
Well, I wouldn't say it's a terrible song.
Terrible.
I don't get the reference for this moment.
Well, the worst while it's a Beautiful Day is returning, I guess, for him. I don't know.
Well,
and then this was like the fucking song at the Super Bowl that year with the Patriots. It was just really bad overall. Like,
well, this, that's
it was the January of trash with fucking Beautiful Day. I was so tired of this fucking song. Every week with Triple H and then the Patriots. It was just too much. And they played it nonstop over here, around here. Oh, God. Oh, I hate that fucking song.
Oh, God. That's actually one of my favorite halftime shows, though, because that was obviously the post 9/11 and they did the names. And yeah, it was a good halftime in that aspect. But I didn't get the the song was nice, but it just didn't seem fitting for him. Like you were expecting something a little more harder edged than ding, 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 ding. I don't know. There's better songs on that album than that anyway.
It's a beautiful
but
day,
and then
Patriots.
That January 7th, 2002 mm-hmm. from Madison Square Garden. The moment came.
And so did you.
And so did I. you know when I always throw you a softball there. He returns. Ridiculous. I mean, you talk about geeked. Holy Jesus. What, did he live in the pharmacy? Wow. But obviously, I mean, when you're talking about a lower bodily injury like a knee or a quad, an ankle, a leg, really it's only one thing you can work out, and that's your upper body. So, of course, you look ridiculously huge. Mm-hmm. Now, I'm trying to remember, JR. I wonder how much, because I knew the minute he walked out, I wanted to buy that leather jacket denim combo.
Oh, Christ.
But I remember it was fucking like $300 or some fucking ridiculous
price. Price was rocking that thing for years before that.
Yes, he did. Except he used to spit his water out of a glass. I mean, come on. Oh, well, I won't break the glass, Mom. Studio B. All right. And of course, he came out. He botched mm-hmm. his first line and just who in the hell I am.
Yeah. Huge reaction, though.
Yeah, no, God, incredible. I mean, the song looped. I don't think we've ever heard that before.
And then Angle came out. They have a quick showdown. They get in a little fight. Triple H tosses him out of the ring. During a match with Austin and Angle on the January 10th SmackDown, Kane, Big Show, Triple H all interfered. In the end, only Triple H remained standing, and Taker stared him down from the top of the ramp. Mm-hmm. On January 14th, Triple H stated he wanted to win the title, the world title, undisputed title. Austin came out. They fought until Taker came out and hit Triple H with a chair, allowing Austin to hit a stunner. Undertaker then hit Austin with the chair, and on the January 17th edition of SmackDown, Austin and Triple H defeated Angle and Booker T. After the match, Taker came out again and stared them down. So you could tell they're really starting to push all the contenders for this Rumble match.
Oh, yeah.
Trying to line up all the big guys.
Yeah, no, they definitely were saying that this Rumble was going to be loaded with favorites. Particularly, and that's another reason I just love Taker. He was just stalking them. He was just mm-hmm. kind of just letting them know I'm around.
Right.
You know, it was awesome. As terrible, I thought, as the Rock Jericho build was, is as great as I thought the build for this Rumble was.
So did you like the moment here with him coming out and it's just him and Austin? Like, kind of a nice callback to the last time we saw him in 01.
Yes.
Like, it had to bring closure to that a little bit.
Yes. And it also kind of reminded me almost of Hogan Warrior 90.
Yeah.
Just kind of these two big behemoths, powerhouses of the business.
And it's funny how much has changed. Like, you're calling back to May of 01, but God, how much feels different now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
It feels like years ago.
And, yeah, it does feel like years ago.
Triple H is just huge, like you said. It's way,
yeah, he's, yeah,
way too big.
And that takes a effect on the matches. And we'll talk about that throughout the next 6 months before he kind of levels out a little bit. So he comes out at 22. So now it's time for they get a couple of comedy spots. At number 23 is former Cruiserweight champion, mm-hmm. former one-half tag team champion, and that is the Hurricane. Of course, the big storyline with him was he was kind of like the Hardcore Holly 2000,
right,
where he can take out all the
and
big
I, I love this. He comes in, he tries to double choke slam Triple H and Austin, and they just look at each other, look at him, and then beat the crap out of him.
Yeah, they throw him out of the ring. Number 24 is the other half of the APA, and that's Farouk. And this is the whole point I was mentioning, JR. You bring in Bradshaw when all the scrubs are in,
right,
to make him look dominant, and then you bring in Farouk now where all the guys that you know
he
he's
lasts
not going to toss.
36 seconds.
Yeah. And now, the big return at number 25. And this is the one that needed to be mm-hmm. A surprise.
I don't know, though. I like that they announced it. It got me really excited to see it, you know?
Yeah, I
like,
know.
Like, I was prepped. I was ready to go. I was like, yes, I can't wait. And when's he going to... Because part of the surprise is, when's he going to come out? So there is already inherent surprise in this.
That is true. That is
so
true.
So it was like, I was anticipating him greatly.
And at number 25. On the same night that Ric Flair wrestled his first WWF TV match is the guy who wrestled Flair in his last WWF TV match. The great Mr. Perfect.
Last seen helping Triple H defeat Mark Mero for the IC title on Raw in 1996.
For symmetry.
I know, right? Very symmetrical. He would move on to WCW. It was an integral part of the war between WCW and the NWO. He'd almost replace Arn Anderson and the Four Horsemen before turning on them at Fall Brawl, became a U.S. champion, reignited his feud with Bret Hart, was part of the West Texas Rednecks, with the also Rap as Crap song, in the pitiful feud with the No Limit Soldiers. Hennig would then move on to the short-lived XWF, where he had a match with Hulk Hogan that was eventually featured on Hogan's Anthology DVD. He would appear on Sunday Night Heat match at WrestleMania, but this would be his last pay-per-view appearance. Released May 8th after the infamous plane ride from hell. He'd go to TNA, hung there for a little bit, and passed away, sadly, of a heart attack on February 10th, 2003. Just 44 years old, death attributed to cocaine, but his father believes steroids and painkillers also contributed to his young demise. Eventually inducted to the Hall of Fame in 2007. Another very sad passing, another part of our childhood gone. And I was pumped that he returned here.
Yeah,
And I liked his team with Boss Man. That was the team I kind of teased earlier. I used to call them Team 91 because like a throwback to 1991.
Team 7, WrestleMania 7.
Yes. So it was a really cool. They did that. I got to see him live against Steve Austin in February at Raw in Providence, which was really cool. I hadn't seen him live in a long time. And I thought, he is a guy who didn't come in with a contract, but he ended up getting signed because he looked in great shape.
He looked awesome.
And he had a great performance here.
So
and I was so happy in a guy that didn't really get completely utilized.
No, it
and then
sucked.
Got shit canned. A guy that they could have really used.
Oh my god!
I thought in
'02
he would have been
they
great.
Just forgave him. We'll talk about that plane ride later. That was a bunch of horse shit, to be honest with
you. A guy that really could have been putting other guys over, could have had some really good matches, and it doesn't really get much run here. But it was cool to see him one last time. Final record 6-13. Not a lot of matches. 0-5 at the Rumble. 1-3 at Mania. 1-3 at SummerSlam. 3-1 at Survivor Series. And 1-1 at King of the Ring. So great to see him back. Sad to know where he's headed. And of course he gets off the spot of the match, Scott, when he's against the ropes about to get eliminated, and he spits the gum in the air and swats it.
He has to spit his gum.
And he swats it out into the crowd as he's getting pushed off the rope. So
awesome.
Yeah, really, really cool.
Totally, absolutely underused. I saw him at a SmackDown in April in Bridgeport. It was the first time I'd seen him live since God. Probably mid 93, probably some house show or Raw in New Haven in 93. Totally underused. We'll talk about him more future reviews. Maybe we'll talk about him at Mania when he's on that match, on that Heat match. Because so I was talking about it today with Johnny Reckless about totally rebooking these couple months,
right,
and really utilizing him more. But we'll get to that. We'll get to that down the line. All right, another favorite comes in the ring at number 26. Taking pleasure in building Steve Rogers' iPod playlist there.
Always a fan of the Junior Mafia.
It is, isn't it? Absolutely. Your boy coming in at number 26, another heavy favorite.
Very heavy favorite, legit contender.
Yeah. Yep. First Rumble match.
Mm-hmm. Oh, first yeah. Huh? Interesting.
Yeah.
You notice never a full ring in this Rumble. Always very spread out.
Yeah, very rare. We didn't have a glug
right.
in this match. We
well
had,
balanced.
You know, yeah, it was very well balanced. There probably wasn't more than maybe six guys at a time, six tops.
Mm-hmm.
He comes in at 26. Then at 27, you're like, he could be a favorite. But
oh, still looking awful out here. Yeah. Just a waste. He comes out, fucking Big Show, 2 minutes and 45 seconds at the end, gets dumped by Kane. Just awful showing, as usual.
Yeah. He gets dumped by the guy that comes in at number 28. That's right. Of course, he was the big stalwart the year before in New Orleans with the 12 eliminations or 11, 12.
Yeah, a little bit different this time around.
Yes, yeah. Too many studs in this one.
Yeah, only lasts a minute.
At number 29. All right, we'll talk more about this when we get to Mania when he gets his big win. But at number 29 is Rob Van Dam, and you could argue he was a favorite too.
Yeah, but another lame showing. Like, I thought Kane's, I just want to mention quickly, Kane slamming Big Show out was actually kind of cool.
Yes.
But him and Show, just lame showings. And RVD, again, just really lame. Comes in hot, wipes everyone out, and then kind of a sign of things to come. Triple H just pedigrees him, and that's it. It's dumped easily. RVD just completely killed off, I thought, here. Just, he felt like he's a guy. You talk about, like, Bradshaw early. Like, RVD is a guy that should have been, like, number six. And had a pretty good run early on, instead of just another guy at the end here. I mean, well, why don't you mention number 30? Because I want to kind of lump these guys all together.
Yeah, and number 30 is a guy that Steve Austin. We're coming for you, nigga. Yep, that guy. And he comes in at number 30 after feuding with Austin over the last few weeks. Of course, the infamous brawl in the supermarket when he goes, milk, it does your body good.
What?
Like, just playing basketball.
What?
And then hits him with the milk.
Yeah. But I thought, has there ever been a bigger waste of, like, the last four spots? Like, of big names? Like, they save these guys for the end. They're all out within 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Show, Kane, RVD, Booker, they're all dumped, like so fast. It's why bother saving the big names if you're not going to use them? Like, why don't you bring them in around 20 instead?
Why do you have Al Snow at 6?
Right. It's like, or bring them in between 20 and 25. And then have the chum at the end, like Albert and Test and those guys, get tossed. And have these guys at least last 10 or 15 minutes. It's like, you're killing Booker and RVD look like trash coming out here. I mean, Mr. Perfect gets a good run, at least.
Yeah.
And I like the final six and the final four. Pretty good group of guys. Angle dumps Austin, and that kind of makes the finish obvious at that point. Do you think they should have Austin, Triple H as the last two to at least add intrigue?
Yes.
Because I feel like once Austin's out, you kind of know where they're headed.
Yep. I would love to have had Austin and Triple H as the last two. That would have been fantastic.
Right. Would have paid off the story, and it would have made... It would have just made it a little bit more questionable, but I'm guessing they did it, and we've talked about this before. They probably didn't want to split the pop.
Yeah, that too.
You get him out early, and then you let Triple H kind of run on his own. So Austin comes in, mashes them all with chairs. Perfect. Keeps hanging on. Even gets a perfect plex in. I thought he was out a couple times.
Yeah.
One move, they tease Angle to win, and then Triple H gets the win, tosses. Perfect goes out, and Angle goes out as well. Pretty fun rumble. I thought it was interesting booking, good star power, and some memorable moments despite the fairly obvious. I mean, a lot of big names, but a fairly obvious winner. You kind of knew Triple H was going to Mania.
Yeah, you did. I mean, obviously, I thought so. And I do like how he stole his boy Sean's 95 dangling feet, and I'm like, oh, he's going to fuck this up. He didn't, but it wasn't as dramatic as Sean's. I mean, Triple H is taller than him, so it's not like he was that far off the ground, but that was pretty funny. Yeah, I mean, it was pretty predictable, but it didn't matter. It was still loaded with...
No, it was like one of the ones we talked about. Austin, 98, Shawn, 96. I mean, you had to do it. So, points for them to just doing it. Rock in 2000. Just do it, you know, just
but then
pull
they,
the trigger.
But then they fuck around with it, and we'll get to that in the next vault. I thought that what they do in the next vault is an absolutely stupid idea, but we'll get to the... We'll talk about that. In any event... Triple H is your winner, his first Rumble win, and he heads to WrestleMania in Toronto to face somebody, Lord knows who. At the time, I'm not going to lie, didn't think it was going to be Jericho. Didn't think so. I had a feeling that Austin was going to win the title, and we were going to really have the power trip blow-off, which I think would have been an awesome main event at WrestleMania 18. That was what I thought.
I didn't think Austin... I didn't think it would be Jericho, though.
I don't know.
We'll talk.
Yeah.
A very good show.
Yes.
We had a really good undercard. We had a great Vince Flair brawl. We had a really good world title match, a very fun rumble, a lot of star power. And one of the, you know, we're ticking towards the end of stacked shows. And this is, you know, I think we got another year's worth, but this is one of the last. Maybe the last huge stacked rumble for a while. But a really, really fun show. I really enjoyed rewatching this one.
Yeah, I did too. If you don't like what's on the stream on the network and you're looking for something to just kind of, you know, watch for the hell of it, I recommend clicking on this. Mm-hmm. I think you'll really enjoy it. Much better show. get past Jerry's unlistenable announcing, at least the first couple of matches. He doesn't do as bad. He's not that great in the Trish match. Probably from the Vince Flair match on, Jerry's not as bad. But those first few matches, he's just unlistenable. Get past that, and I think you'll really enjoy this show. I think it's really very, very good. One of the best overall Rumble pay-per-views ever.
Agreed.
Definitely. Yeah.
All right, Scott, that's it for this week. I hope everyone has a great weekend. We will be back on Monday with, I believe, No Way Out, correct?
Let us take a look at the... Pretty sure.
Wouldn't kill me to fucking check this ahead of time. I know.
At least one of us open it.
Yes, No Way Out 2002. And then next Wednesday, we have our WrestleMania preview show of the main event. You and your crew. Do you know who's on yet, or are you still working that out?
We do know who's on.
Okay. You want to tell us?
Surprise.
Okay.
Surprise? Well,
that's fine.
It will be three of the four core four.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Willey, Jordan Duncan, and Andrew Reich will be on. Ben Morse will not be on.
Good.
He's got to head to New Orleans early. But we do have a very special guest.
Cool.
That will be joining us. Maybe one or two. We might have five in the round table. We'll see.
Okay. And then I also will be Kevin Kelly, episode 6. Mm-hmm. We're going to have Ashley 6, kind of fitting for episode 6. He's a wrestler up in Canada. He's battling cancer and kind of telling a story. May have some other little surprises planned as well. And then Scott will be back the week after on April 7th. We're going to recap WrestleMania, the Hall of Fame. Obviously, maybe we'll have Chad on if he ends up going, and maybe I'll try and have Ben or someone on that's also attending the show, Reich. Get some guys going down there, so maybe we can have them on for a live take. And then Wednesday, April 9th, will be WrestleMania 18. So there's your next couple weeks on The Place to Be. Hope you enjoyed episode 300 as we now move towards 400. We want to thank you all once again for your support. A lot of nice comments on the Facebook pages over the last couple days.
Yes, thank you very much.
Also, check out, Scott, I should have mentioned, episode 2 of The Extra Point. Really good episode, you and Dr. G. You had Todd Gessling to talk March Madness, Roger Morissette with NFL free agency.
Yep.
So if you guys want to hear some sports talk, check that out. Very entertaining.
And just quickly, I mentioned at the end of The Extra Point, we will be having a special Extra Point this week. It'll be the Doctors and My 2014 MLB preview, just a standalone baseball preview. We didn't have time, and then next weekend we will not be able to do a show. So we're not sure how it's going to be laid out, but there will be an Extra Point Major League preview next week. So.
Very cool. All right, for Scott, I'm Justin. We'll talk to you Monday night. No Way Out, Milwaukee. Talk to you soon.
I'm not going to Mariah Carey my head all night.
You're all write it up.
The chiffon.
I don't care how small your testicles are.
Oh, the discount at the pharmacy.
Clearing the sea.